Hey Bill, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Dan. Can you see me?
I can see you. Can you see me?
I can see you, but I don't see myself. Am I supposed to?
I don't know that you need to, do you?
No, I don't need to at all.
But you might, if you navigate around, it might be in one of the boxes there.
Well, you're in that side box, but I don't see anything. Maybe gallery view will give me. Oh, there I am. Okay, got it. All right. Do I need to change my name to TRPA?
I was going to ask that people do that, but Bill Yates TRPA works, or Bill Yates Governing Board.
Right. Rename. Right. How's that?
Looks perfect.
Okay.
I'm about to send out the meeting link to this full list. Per request, people do not want to open the agenda to find it. Hey, Melanie, I just made you a co-host as well, so you should be able to assume control whenever I go off the rails.
Just take my, just pop in. Okay, we'll stop right there.
I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I was just looking at the controls to, because I don't think I practiced sharing my screen yesterday when we decided to switch over.
Do you want to do a quick one now, or are you good?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. I'll pass it over to you.
Okay. All right. You can see my screen.
We got you. Looks good.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hi, Dan. I'm going to be muted and off screen, but listening.
I trust you. If I hear any yard work going on, I'll know something else is happening.
I've got my priorities, and this is above yard work, not below.
I like the warning, Hester, that you're going to be ominously behind us.
Unless it gets tough, Bill, then I'll go mow my yard.
Well, Dan's already tried to calm me down, so he's done a good job so far.
All right, way to go, Dan.
He's good.
You'll see Bill drinking a beer. I think that's what he means.
That's a good thing.
It'll be a while, but maybe, Dan, that's one of the ways you're going to pay me back in a post-COVID period of time.
It seems like getting off easy.
I will return to the shores of Lake Tahoe and you can buy me a few rounds.
That sounds fair.
You can get some of that beer that Mark Amadei was hawking the other day at the summit.
I don't think that's the best Tahoe beer, but anyway.
Is that beer still around?
It is.
Oh, really?
I think it's brewed about 6 blocks from my house by another brewery. They just have the name.
Right. Actually, who was it at the board-to-board call? I guess it was Dave Brandenberger. He was drinking a knee-deep, what's it called? Tahoe Deep or Tahoe Blues. It was a good beer.
Yeah, Knee Deep Brewing, isn't it?
Is John Marshall also back in the weeds?
I believe he is exiting the weeds to join us today.
Oh, he's going to actually make an appearance? Not I just sit behind, hover?
It may be ominously looming in the background as well, but...
He'll just speak up when I say something wrong legally. He'll just say, wait a minute.
That's usually what he does to me, so...
Now, that's what he does during most governing board meetings.
Hey, Bill, did you get Nicole's comments or Nicole's note that she's not going to be able to make it?
I did not. Does that mean Sophie also?
I'm not positive. She just sent me a text saying that an emergency has come up. And she related some comments for me to state at the appropriate time.
Well, that's kind of ominous.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. This is Dan. We've got a couple more people joining, so I'm going to give everyone about 2 more minutes before we kick it all off.
Hi, all.
Afternoon, Mark. How goes it?
Can you hear me?
We got you.
Oh, you can. I'm going to turn off my mic.
Looks like your printer has its own light.
Sorry, that's the hand of God coming down and blessing me.
That's good. You need it.
Through the skylight.
Dan, I just moved up in the techie world. I can hit the space bar, I can talk, and then I take my hand off the space bar and back to mute.
I'm going to ask you not to do that too many times during the meeting.
Cool trick. Thanks for teaching that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, though. I think with that little tech tip, we'll probably call this meeting to order. And I just want to thank everyone, first of all, for joining us this afternoon at the first meeting of the Transportation Technical Advisory Group. My name is Dan Segan. I'm one of the leads of the Threshold Update Initiative over at TRPA, and I'll be leading the first meeting of the Technical Advisory Group. And before I give it over to TRPA Governing Board Bill Yates to provide us a little welcome and maybe another tech tip, I wanted to ask each of you to rename yourself on Zoom. And the way that we ask people to do the naming convention to make the meeting a little bit easier to manage with this many folks online is that you do your name and then a dash and then your affiliation. So you'll see I'm at the top of the list, at least on mine, and it's Dan Segan, TRPA. So as we do the little welcome and as we go through the agenda, please take the time to do that. And thank you again for joining us. And with that, Bill, I'll turn it over to you to hit the space bar.
Okay, I'm going to hit the other one. But yes, I want to thank everyone for taking the time and lending your expertise to participate in TRPA's Transportation Technical Advisory Committee. Like the Transportation Model Working Group that many of you were a part of, TRPA recognized the need for technical support, advice and input on the development of a basin-wide VMT threshold. Project-level transportation impact assessment tool or methodology and a mobility mitigation fee to replace the current air quality mitigation fee. As you can tell from the agenda that Dan has put together, we're going to jump right in because TRPA staff and the governing board would like to get all of these items developed so that the Advisory Planning Commission and Regional Plan Implementation Committee can review and recommend approval of these VMT-related proposals for Governing Board approval in December. I will turn it over to staff to go over the details, but I do want to respond to a letter that Dan just sent out from Friends of the West Shore regarding reduced vehicle miles of travel, which is air quality 14 threshold, regarding nitrate deposition. I agree with Friends of the West Shore that this is not the forum or the group for a policy debate about the purpose behind existing vehicle miles threshold related to nitrate deposition. I think that what we're trying to do is simply create, and maybe it's going to be a new one, maybe we just leave the AQ14 exactly where it is and let people fuss over that while we do what hopefully we're going to try to do by December, is have a VMT threshold focusing on our greenhouse gas requirements as a metropolitan planning organization in California, but also with the fact that Nevada is essentially doing the same thing. Thanks to Governor Sisolak, who made it really clear in the Tahoe summit this week that as far as he's concerned, we can quit quibbling about climate change. It's how we deal with the question of climate change. And for us to have a basin-wide greenhouse gas reduction threshold is so appropriate. And so if we can move on with so many other things with the implementation of our regional plan. So I don't want to get us bogged down in a dispute of whether we're replacing one or the other. It's how we, getting your help, your expertise, your advice on us developing a basin-wide, enforceable greenhouse gas reduction that will drive us to reduce greenhouse gases in the basin based on the amount of travel and traffic in the basin, and also the additional items we're going to put on our threshold, which address our concerns about transportation within the basin. And we do have limitations on the transportation that comes into the basin. But hopefully when we get our act together and have ourselves thresholds that address this issue and plans and policies in place, we'll get help from our colleagues outside of this basin in helping us deal with the question of how visitors come into and out of the basin. So now I'll happily turn this over to Dan and shut up. And I, again, I'm most grateful for your help and commitment to the protection of Lake Tahoe.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the introduction. And as Bill mentioned, we've set a quite an aggressive timeline for ourselves for developing this new threshold standard. So I just wanted to take a moment to talk about what that timeline looks like and the role of this committee in making that timeline possible and making it happen. So we've broken today's agenda and really the entire initiative down into two separate but related pieces of the same puzzle. And we're seeking your guidance on both of those pieces. So those are establishing a new threshold standard for ourselves that helps reduce reliance on the automobile, compact directive, promotes mobility, and promotes the state's greenhouse gas reduction goals. And the second part of that is updating how we look at projects and our mitigation fee to ensure that that element of how we drive action towards standard attainment are sufficient and are moving in the right direction. And in each phase of this process, we've divided it up so that we'll have three meetings over the next 3 months. And each of those will have specific topics and specific action points that we're seeking input from this committee on. We really do view this committee as an extension of the model working group committee that many of you worked on, and in an effort to ensure that as decision makers, the governing board, APC, and RPIC really have the best information available to them as we make the decisions about the future of our basin. So we're looking to this committee for that type of guidance. Which brings us to today's agenda. So we'll be covering elements related to both the threshold update and the project level transportation impact assessment. We're going to start each of those by talking a little bit about the overall work plan. For the threshold update, we want to give a brief overview of the policy landscape that Bill alluded to. We want to talk about the sources of VMT data. And then finally, we'll end by seeking input from this committee on a recommended baseline for establishment of that standard. Then we'll likely take a short break, assuming we've made it through in reasonable time, and we'll transition over to the project impact assessment. At that point, we'll talk about our existing code of ordinances. We're gonna do a little more deep dive into California State Bill 743. And then finally, we're gonna ask you for some input and guidance on how we approach bringing the best information to bear as we go into these decisions. So most of you are probably incredibly familiar with Zoom calls now that we've been in this sort of virtual world for the last 6 months, but just wanted to talk a little bit about our protocols here at TRPA in case this is your first TRPA meeting. The number one thing, you know, the success of this group and the success of this initiative really depends on participation. So just because we're not all in the same room together, we really do appreciate you paying close attention and trying to be present whenever possible. We do ask that people mute themselves when they're not speaking so that people can hear the presentations and ongoing discussion. We also, when you do speak, we do ask that you identify yourself beforehand. We've got about 35 people on the call today. So just to help us keep track, we ask that you state your name before you make any comments or questions. The other thing is, because of the size of the group today, we're going to be monitoring the Zoom chat feature. If you want to have, if you want to raise comments or you want to ask a question, please raise your hand or make a note in the comment, and we will get to you as soon as we possibly can. And if we ignore you, certainly feel free to take yourself off mute and just chime in. So with that, I'm going to go down the list of everyone who is in the meeting today. I had an old boss who used to say, nobody can listen until everyone has spoken. And so to ensure that all of you are actually listening today, we're going to give everyone the opportunity to briefly introduce themselves. I'd like you to say your name, affiliation, and then goals or expectations for the meeting today. So starting, I'm going to just go down the list. Andrew Ryan.
Hi, everybody. Andrew Ryan here from PR Design and Engineering up here in Kings Beach. And my goal or expectation for today is my firm focuses uniquely on redevelopment in downtown areas. So we are interested to see and participate in how management of BMT will affect redevelopment that is sorely needed in Kings Beach. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And Jeffrey Hens.
Yes. Hi. Jeffrey Hens, North Lake Tower Resort Association. We're also the Chamber and the Convention and Visitors Bureau, CVB, which is the destination marketing and management organization for the North Lake Tahoe region. I'm relatively new, so a big goal for me is obviously to learn a lot about what our goals are, big picture goals, and just learn as much as I possibly can, and then obviously contribute everywhere we possibly can as well.
Great, thank you. Natalie Porter.
Hi, this is Natalie Porter. I'm with El Dorado County, and the goals or expectations, information gathering, we're on the West Slope, we're setting our significance thresholds for SB 743, and so just making sure that we're kind of in concert with what's going on in the basin.
Thanks. Bill, did you want to introduce yourself again?
Yeah, I'll do that again. Bill Yates, I'm the chair of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. My goals are, as I said before, to get all three of these items put together, developed with the help of this committee, so that the governing board can adopt these and we can start in 2021 with a set of things that help us address the question of vehicle miles traveled. And also so that we're better able to implement our regional plan and do the kind of redevelopment and other things we think are essential to carry out the goals and policies of our regional plan and the area plans adopted by the local jurisdictions.
Great, thank you. Carol Chaplin.
I'm getting there. I thought I should at least show my face for a minute. Good afternoon. Thank you for including me. My name is Carol Chaplin. I'm with the Lake Tahoe Visitors Authority and the Tahoe Douglas Visitors Authority. I seem to sit with a lot of you more regularly now, so good to see those people that I am participating with daily, weekly, et cetera, and as well as some new faces. I don't know that I have clear expectations. My goal is to get smart and to support this effort wherever I can.
Great, thanks for being here. Christine Malley Gribble. Christine, do I have you there?
I think she's muted.
I'm so sorry. I'm Christine Maley-Grubel. I'm the executive director, a new executive director for the Truckee North Tahoe, TMA. I'm very pleased to be a part of this. And certainly, we would like to do whatever we can on behalf of the TMA to assist with implementing the regional transportation plan and providing any input that would be helpful in order to come up with the solutions that we're looking for within these workshops over the next few months. Thank you.
Thank you. Courtney Weish.
good afternoon. Courtney Waikiki here. I'm with the City of South Lake Tahoe Planning Division, kind of getting pulled in as potentially being the liaison with Development Services Department in the city, and just wanting to better understand the implications of SB 743 and how it's going to affect the city and future projects and overall just trying to catch up.
Great, thank you. Crystal Jacobson.
Hi there, thank you. I'm Crystal Jacobson. I'm with the Placer County Tahoe Community Development Resource Agency. And I'm here, I think, mostly for me, for information gathering. I know we've had staff in our public works participate on the your model working group. And so I know one of our goals is really to see how this standard, the threshold standard, could align with our county kind of wider or more broad efforts on implementation of SB 743. But then also, I think that the number one goal for us is the implementation of our Tahoe Basin Area Plan. So trying to get to a standard that will help us meet that goal of implementing our plan.
Thank you. Cynthia Smith.
Hi, this is Cynthia Smith. I work with Caltrans Planning Travel Forecasting Unit. I was part of the working group for the travel demand model for TRPA, and I'm just wanting to stay current on the VMT and modeling efforts in the Tahoe Basin. That's all.
And Danielle Hughes.
Hi, Danielle Hughes with the Tahoe Transportation District. And I'd say my goals today are to help assure that the VMT model inputs serve both our community and visitors and establishes a good path forward for a baseline condition and allow us to implement the regional transportation plan.
Great. Eric Young.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Young from Washoe County. I think that my goal for today is to just try and figure out what TRPA is up to and trying to accomplish. I think I'm going to listen for a little while before I have much input. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Erin Casey.
Hi, everyone. Erin Casey with the County Executive Office up here in Lake Tahoe. And I would just echo Crystal Jacobson's comments. For me personally, just trying to make sure I'm up to speed on where we're at with this and then understanding the impacts, implications to the implementation of the county's area plan.
Great, thank you. Gavin Feiger.
Muted there. Gavin Feiger, Leap to Save Lake Tahoe. Our goal for this is to make sure that the end result not only doesn't undermine the regional plan and area plans and regional transportation plan, but helps us implement all those plans with seeing a reduction in VMT from all projects and plans. So kind of where we were headed with the original VMT threshold and trying to make it more modern and applicable to today. Looking forward to it.
Gordon Shaw. Gordon, I saw you earlier. Are you still there? We'll go on and we can loop back to you. John Hester.
Planning Agency. And first of all, I want to thank everyone for participating. My objectives are that we come up with measures and a project level tool that work together and measure what we really care about in the regional plan, regional transportation plan, and area plans.
Thanks. And Gordon, it looks like you just came off mute.
Yes, the little trick of the space bar didn't work. Gordon Shaw at LSE Transportation Consultants, up on the North Shore, but have basically worked in every jurisdiction as a transportation consultant and have been struggling with the existing TRPA VMT standards for a couple of decades now. So my goal is really to learn more about these pretty substantial proposals on the table, both in how we measure VMT and what tools we use in measurement. It's going to be, this is a pretty dramatic change in the overall process here, and it's really going to affect a lot of what we do. Thank you.
Thanks. John Marshall.
Hello all, this is John Marshall, General Counsel for TRPA. My goal for today is to speak as little as possible.
Thanks. Ken Caseman.
Hi, this is Ken Caseman. I manage the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's research and analysis team that includes both our modeling resources as well as the threshold evaluation and update processes. So primarily making sure that we have the resources towards this project that's necessary, and to make sure that we can get everything smoothly through the processes.
Lou Feldman.
Good afternoon, Lou Feldman, Feldman Teal. I'm a land use attorney here in the basin and have had some experience with redevelopment, and want to make sure that as we take a look at GSG, we don't lose sight of the fact that, as we're all painfully aware, I think we're substantially built out, and it's the older development that has little environmental benefit, and in particular, there's stationary sources associated with some of this older development that are very high GSG contributors. And I think we need to be mindful of that, because what we don't want to do is formulate a protocol that maintains the status quo.
Thanks. Lucia Maloney.
Hi, good afternoon. Lucia Maloney representing Carson City. I'm the transportation manager here, and I also sit as the vice chair of the Tahoe Transportation District Board of Directors. I'm happy to be here today. Carson City, we want to be good partners with Tahoe and support you as best as we can, both from a technical side as well as a policy side. So thanks for the opportunity to participate.
Thank you. Mark Bruce.
Hi, I'm the vice chair of TRPA, and my goals align perfectly with Bill Yates as the chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Mia Kang.
Hi, I'm Mia Kang with Related California. I'm an affordable housing infill developer. I built the Kings Beach Affordable Deed Restricted Housing in North Lake Tahoe at the Basin, and worked with some of the older TRPA rubric with infill and TRIPS. And I'd like to be able to, one, learn and hear what the approach is for this GHG and lower VMT model, but also be your sounding board, or be a sounding board for sort of realistic, what does it take for a developer to get a project through? And also I want to be able to explore the possibility of co-benefits to building in existing area plans and areas, in that you're building infill so you have more trips outside of cars, and to be able to move the needle in the other direction. So instead of penalizing new development because you're locating it in the places we want them to be in, let's also find a way to sort of balance it out where they're creating benefits, i.e., you know, walking to businesses and stores, and, you know, having a very pro walkability aspect to a community that adds for resilience and economic stability as well for the businesses. So anyway, bigger approach, but I'm here to learn and I'm here to listen. Thank you.
Thanks. Michelle Glicker.
Sorry, I was working from two screens and using both. So I'm Michelle Glickert. I work at TRPA, and I am the program manager for transportation. So today I'm really looking forward to working with everyone here to revise the standard. gaining all of your input. This is a great diverse group to do this. And really, at the end of it, creating that project impact tool that better aligns with our goals and provides that transparency I think a lot of our partners and our implementers are really looking for.
Thanks. Nick Haven.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Nick Haven. I am the division manager for the Transportation and Long-Range Planning Department at TRPA. So I know many of you, and there's some new faces, but thanks for taking the time today. My expectation is really trying to get everybody kind of on that same plane of understanding. I know there's a lot of technical topics we're going to cover, but we're hopeful that we can get everyone kind of up to speed and rolling along, because we are, trying to move this along pretty quickly, but obviously in a very detailed and transparent fashion. So thanks again, and please participate heavily. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Raj Parendla.
Hi, Dan. My name is Raj, and I'm the new Chief of Modeling and Forecasting for District 3 Caltrans. And my goals echo with my staff member, Cynthia Smith, and it's been a week that I'm on board with this position, and I wanted to learn more, how the SB 743 has been implemented with the local regional transportation agencies, and like to build partnerships in helping them out, with the analysis and any technical approach, and also mediation with the headquarters in terms of SB 743 and the CEQA guidelines.
Welcome aboard. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy first couple weeks.
Thank you, sir.
Reed Hafer, TRPA. I manage the travel demand model and oversee a lot of transportation data collection. And I'm excited to hear everyone's thoughts on different transportation metrics.
Thanks. Sophie Wenslow.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sophie Wenslow. I'm with the California Attorney General's Office. I am mostly here to listen and learn today, and also note that my office generally shares the concerns expressed in the Friends of the West Shore letter, and we prefer that any recommendations be deferred until the next meeting. But I really look forward to the conversation today and to participating moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Steve DeShera.
Good afternoon, everyone. Steve DeShera, CEO at the Lake Tahoe South Shore Chamber of Commerce. Our goal here in participating and supporting this process is to make sure we do not undermine the other elements of the regional plan, specifically with regard to redevelopment, as Andrew Ryan said. And also, there's a lot of synergy around regulations in this region, but regulations alone do not get us where we need to go. And that's why I am personally an active advocate in building regional consensus for the One Tahoe Transportation Funding Initiative, because without funding, we can regulate the heck out of ourselves, but we won't really get to where we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Juan Wang.
Hello, this is Xuan Wang with RTC Washoe. I manage the travel demand model here. Today, I just want to participate, and we want to work with the TRPA to coordinate our efforts in developing the model and the data sharing, and also just to listen and learn in general. Thank you.
Thank you. And there's one anonymous caller. I'll give you the opportunity now if you want to introduce yourself. If you decide you want to introduce yourself a little bit later, just let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to jump to it because we've got a fairly full agenda today. So I wasn't planning on spending a ton of time talking about the history of the threshold standard, so we've just devoted one slide of this presentation. As most of you know, the current standard was adopted in 1982 to reduce nitrogen deposition to the lake. At the time, people feared that it was algae growth in part spurred by increased nitrogen deposition from automobiles that was causing the declining clarity of the lake. And so we set a target of reducing the vehicle miles traveled in the region by 10%, to reduce nitrogen deposition by 10%. And what you've seen is as a result of increased fuel efficiency standards, NOx emissions from automobiles is significantly lower than it was. And we likely passed the target of a 10% deposition probably 20 years ago now. And we're on a path to have about a tenth of nitrogen emissions by 2030. And that's a tenth from a 2000 baseline, not even from a 1980s baseline. So far lower than that. So if we're no longer interested in VMT from a NOx standpoint, what were the primary concerns driving the effort today? And what is it that we're trying to create or promote with a new VMT standard? And we've identified three things that we were directed to look at by the Regional Plan Implementation Committee to implement and support the state's efforts at greenhouse gas emissions, to reduce auto dependence per the bi-state compact, and overall increase mobility within our region, increase options for people to travel without having to get into their cars, to be able to walk, bike, and take transit somewhere. And recognizing the incredibly tight timeline that we're under trying to update this standard, the Regional Plan Implementation Committee last month also provided us some guidance that effectively established some guide rails for the conversations that we're going to be having over the next 3 months. And there's three specific things they told us to consider. One, to establish a VMT per capita reduction goal. They said to look at a target date for achieving that. And finally, to align with state policy to ensure that we're not creating additional hassles within the region. And so I think in terms of that objective of aligning with state policy and also our overall thinking about this, I wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about the overall policy landscape that we find ourselves in, and specifically talking most about the policy landscape as it relates to the intersection between transportation systems and land use. So I'm sure most of you are probably already aware of this, but I'll just define it right up front. So VMT, when we're talking about this, we're talking about the overall miles traveled on our roadway network. And so VMT in the Tahoe Basin, we're talking about the overall distance that all these buses, cars, bikes, motorbikes travel on our roadways. And that is the vehicle miles traveled within our region. And as you can you're probably aware and just intuitively know, and as Mia mentioned in her sort of comments and introduction, there is a really tight connection between our land use system and our transportation system and how much people drive. So as you're probably aware, in tighter systems and more compact development, people have more options to access the amenities that they're interested in without having to get into their automobile. And as the places that people live become farther away and sprawl increases, people are forced to drive more, and more of their trips are, they both take trips more frequently and the trips are longer. And this is something we intuitively know. It also has played out all over the country and around the world. So we know, for example, that Federal Highway Administration estimates that in the New York metro region, people travel about 15 miles a day within their car because it's a fairly dense, compact development. While in Houston, they're traveling nearly 40 miles a day in their car. So over twice as much for the average resident in Houston as they're traveling in New York. There's also fairly extensive literature out there that talks about what happens when you build a new home, let's say in each of these three regions that you see on your screen right now, and what will happen from a VMT per capita perspective. And the more that you're pushing development into remote areas, the more likely you are to generate additional VMT and higher per capita VMT. And as we locate that new development or mixed use development closer to town centers that are better served by our bike and transit networks, we're more likely to reduce our per capita VMT, reduce overall VMT. And the same is true as we get increasingly tight within our town centers. As you're also all probably aware, greenhouse gases are primarily responsible for driving climate change, and both states are really focused on reducing their overall GHG footprints and GHG emissions. When we talk about reducing GHG, we really get quite specific and quite targeted. And we divide up GHG emissions within regions by the different factors that lead to those. And here we're primarily talking about mobile source GHG emissions. At the most simple level, you can think of mobile source GHG emissions as being a factor of VMT, or the overall amount of travel you're getting, in fleet mix. So the more electric cars that you have out on the road, clearly the less emissions you're gonna get from each mile traveled. And the more combustion engines you have on your road system, the more likely you are to have higher GHG emissions. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the California state policy that's really at the intersection of GHG reduction and really at the land use transportation system nexus. And California has taken it sort of a two-pronged approach. One that is focused at the local and regional level that's really targeted at reducing VMT growth. And the second is at looking at the statewide level. And that's really trying to influence overall fleet mix and trying to encourage more fuel efficient and cleaner cars on the roadways. And overall, the statewide policy really relies primarily on fleet turnover and moving towards electric vehicles to reduce the overall GHG emissions within the state and to achieve the state's overall goals of a zero VMT or a zero GHG future. But as CARB started to put together the forecast and the pathway that would lead to that lower GHG future, one of the things they identified is that the state is expecting significant population growth. And here you're looking at that blue line on your graph. So we're expecting about 24% population growth within the state by 2050. And absent any policy intervention, what the state identified was that there'd be significant VMT growth. And that's the red line at the top of your screen. And what CARB identified is that given the expected population growth and the expected growth in VMT, it was going to be incredibly hard to achieve the overall GHG reduction targets if VMT was allowed to continue to grow on that pathway. And so what CARB suggested as part of their modeling effort is that in order to achieve the statewide targets for GHG reduction, they would need to start initiating some policies to curb the overall growth in VMT. And I think here it's important to understand we're not actually talking about reducing VMT growth or reversing VMT growth within the state. It's about a statewide policy to curb and slow that growth. And what CARB identified was that if they could curb the VMT growth to just be 6.5% from the baseline of where we were between 2015 and 2018, then the state could achieve its overall GHG targets. And so how is the state going to go about doing that? And what are the local and regional policies that we really feel it's important to bring to this group and to think about as we consider updating our overall goals as well? And there's two policies today I want to highlight that are both really at this transportation land use nexus. And those are State Bill 375 and State Bill 743. And the structure between the two really mirrors our discussion today, where SB 375 establishes an overall goals for individual regions, actually for the MPOs within the state of California, to reduce per capita GHG emissions by a set amount. And I think you can think of the SB 375 in very similar ways we're thinking about our target setting effort for a new VMT goal. And then SB 743 is one of the ways, an implementing mechanism, if you will, that shifts how they consider policies, specifically how you consider and evaluate the environmental impacts of projects, and shifts from LOS, or the impacts on drivers to the impacts of driving, to VMT. So SB 743 is one of these ways that the state is changing how it evaluates projects to assure that it can achieve its overall GHG goals. And so SB 375, this is the overall goal here. On the left-hand side, we have the CARB adopted targets for each of the MPOs. And at the very bottom of that list, you'll see us with the orange arrow next to us. And we have targets that we are working to achieve, and which the last two RTP SCSs achieved, and the next one will as well. And so we're shooting for a 5% reduction in per capita GHG emissions from a 2005 baseline. And you may be looking at that list thinking, oh, it's really odd that we've got such a low target when you look at San Francisco or San Diego. But I think it's important to know that the legislation and the overall targets are really focused, they're per capita based targets. And so it's really focused on communities with larger populations and larger overall contributions to statewide VMT. Tahoe VMT is generally less than 1% of the overall statewide VMT within California. But it's also important to note that this legislation and the focus on VMT reduction within the state is not just about GHG. It's about three things that really mirror the goals that we and the RPIC established for us to consider as we think about a new VMT threshold standard. So it's first to promote the greenhouse gas emission reductions. It's second to promote development of multimodal transportation network. And third, a diversity of land uses. And those are all goals of the Bi-State Compact. And they're really goals of the regional plan. So when we started thinking about this process and thinking about how to go about setting a new VMT target that would establish those three goals, we really were looking at how California formulated their target and what their considerations were. And in a general level, California is looking at overall VMT. They divide by the number of residents, and you get the overall per capita VMT, which is roughly akin to GHG in this framework. And we started thinking about how that works, and especially how does that work for a region like Tahoe? Because in Tahoe, we're a little bit different. We're not a major metropolitan area where the VMT is primarily generated by our residents commuting to and from work and running errands on a daily basis. In Tahoe, as many of you know, less than 50% of our VMT is actually produced by residents. So when we started to think about applying a similar framework and the target formulation that California had gone through and the general conceptual framework for that, we started to think about how do we make this Tahoe specific and how do we make it work for a region where VMT isn't just a function of resident activity. And so that's what sort of led us to this notion that we need to redefine the population. Because if we're just thinking about our resident population here, we're missing a lot of the drivers of what's driving VMT within our region, because we know so much of that is coming from visitors and recreation travel. And so what we arrived at is not defining the population of our efficiency metric as the number of residents in our region, but really as the number of people traveling within our region at any given time. And that's the suggestion before you today. Which brings us back to the relatively, I would say, simple three-step process that we've laid out for this group to consider as we establish a new target. And we've highlighted each of these in different colors on the screen here. So today we're really focused on establishing the VMT baseline. What's the overall amount of VMT that we're seeing in the region today? The next meeting, which we expect to schedule next month, will be focused on the traveling population baseline. Who are all the people that are commuting to the region, living in the region, or visiting the region that are actually contributing to that VMT? And those two will give us our per capita VMT today, our per traveling population VMT today. And then the final meeting of this year of this group will be focused on actually setting a target for where do we want to be in the future. So after we've established a common basis of where are we today, we're going to think about where do we want to be tomorrow? What is that future world that we want to create? And how much will people be traveling within their automobile in that future world that we're trying to create? With that, I may take a pause to see if there are any questions before I continue. And I see one from Jeffrey who asks, is VMT just the miles traveled around the basin or is it throughout the entire region? So we actually seek to quantify both. And as part of 743, there is an obligation under California state policy to not just quantify the VMT within your region, but to quantify the VMT of all trips that go through your region. So the full trip length. And so while the target for VMT reduction is focused primarily or exclusively on the VMT that occurs within the region, we are also looking at better defining and better calculating the full trip length of people driving to and from the region. And then also the transportation program is focused on providing people other options to get to the region. And I think the benefits of those programs really are primarily derived outside in VMT reductions outside our region. Anyone else? Other questions? Yeah, Mia.
Okay. So what, you said that the less than 50% of the VMT is generated by residential. And I'm wondering, are you going to distinguish, say, sprawl versus infill under the residential sort of rubric in that, you know, depending on, you know, if you're out clearly, you know, in a new development, a new subdivision, are you classifying residential as just bulk, you know, everyone's the same regardless of where they are, you know, in a town center or outside a town center in terms of VMT for the residential generation side of it?
No, so it's a really good question. I should clarify, it's 50% of the VMT is generated by residents, not just exclusively with residential development, because in the Tahoe region, like I would say about half of our homes are not occupied by full-time residents, and they're still generating VMT because they have visitors coming into them, you know, either to stay seasonally or they're up here just for the weekend. And when we look at specifically projects and how we evaluate projects, our travel demand model divides the region up into over 250 or more than 250 distinct units. And we're looking at VMT generation individually and distinguishing based on where that development is in the region. So we have a really good idea that, you know, residential development in the Myers neighborhood, say where I live, has higher VMT per capita than it does in downtown South Lake Tahoe, if you will.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dan, can I ask a question before we go on?
So
I didn't see anything in there about how you were going to assess the day visitor. And, you know, I know you're having a hard time gathering that information currently, but I guess given that our data, AirSage data, is statistically valid data that has gone through quite a bit of analysis from both TTD, TRPA, and many other stakeholders, how come we're not using that data to recognize that, you know, there's 42% day users coming into Lake Tahoe?
So I think it's a really good question. And I just want to distinguish between two parts of the question, Danielle. So today we're focused just on the overall amount of VMT generation, not really the attribution side of that. So I think, you know, you can think of our travel demand model or the estimates that we're going to talk about later, be it from HPMS or from Streetlight. All of those estimates are holistic estimates of VMT within our region. They account for resident travel, they account for visitor travel, be it day use or, you know, overnight visitors. And they also, you know, they account for commuters to and from the region. I think at the second meeting, the meeting we'll have next month, is when we'll dive into trying to ascertain the best estimate for the overall traveling population at any given time. And I think, you know, one of the things we're going to do as part of that effort is look at all the individual estimates for the traveling population within the region. So we're working with the Science Advisory Council and StreetLight more generally to try to refine those estimates. And one of the things we've done is we've provided them with both the AirSage study from a couple years ago and a number of other studies of overall estimated travel within the region or visitation and population levels. And so we hope to present all of that to you at next month's meeting in a similar format like this with some recommendation of what we think is the most accurate estimate possible of the overall traveling population.
Hey, Dan, this is Raj again. So do you guys collaborate with these web portals for vacation rentals like VRBO, Expedia, Airbnb, and other sorts of, they are the great source of information of, you know, how many visitors that are coming. I mean, do you have any collaboration with those guys? Or you guys buy the third-party data from?
So we get the data from a number of sources. You know, we rely heavily on the local jurisdictions and the counties and the TOT taxes that they collect. And I think as we've seen increased enforcement, we've also seen better, we're getting better and better data about the overall occupancy of those in terms of how many nights they're occupied per year. As Danielle sort of alluded to earlier in Tahoe, we think the overnight visitor population is just one part of the visitation market because we do see so much drive up visitation because we're in such close proximity to a number of large urban centers. So our effort to define the population is really twofold there.
Hey, Dan, this is Lou Feldman. That VHR question that was raised, we have done some fairly significant analysis on the Douglas County side, and the data demonstrates that Douglas County recognizes about 25% of the actual VHR activity that occurs. And of course, that has implications across the board, but certainly if you're relying on that data to anticipate what the BMT is attributable to VHR, you would be understating it by 75%.
Appreciate it. Lou, if you don't mind, I'm going to follow up with you on that next month.
So what is the second metric, Lou, VHR?
Vacation home rental.
Oh, vacation home rental. Okay.
Whether that's VRBO or Airbnb.
I see. So my other question is, I mean, how do we quantify, like, how many vehicles of particular to that group might have commuted from point A to point B? So that's another interesting, that will give you a closer picture of, you know, the VMT, the actual VMT. I mean, do they provide you the number of the visitors to particular unit? From that, we can make a determination of, you know, our average vehicle occupancy, then we can get some kind of picture, you know, how many how many vehicles, you know, have been utilized for that particular trip?
There is a data source called AirDNA.
AirDNA, okay.
And AirDNA scrubs all of these various sites and correlates the data. And we believe that to be a very accurate data source. So I would encourage you guys to take a look at that so we get a much better handle on what's actually happening on the ground.
Okay. Yeah, I would echo that. That data coming from AirDNA, I've used it back in Texas, and it's very reliable and helpful.
Okay.
We definitely will. If you don't mind me following up with you on that as we prepare for the next month's meeting, I'd appreciate that, Lou.
Yeah.
And I can connect you too with the guys from AirDNA if you need any help, Dan.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
And Dan, I guess if you guys are going to start talking about data and follow-up meetings, let's you and I talk about some of the parking data that I have available from like the 28 parking system, and what, because there, I think there's some valuable data there for actually understanding VMT.
That'd be great. I appreciate it, Danielle. I mean, that's actually something I would extend to everyone. So as we think about these topics, you know, today's being what's the overall amount of VMT, next month's being what's the overall number of travelers. If there are specific data sets, reports, studies, or otherwise that you think are germane to this discussion or that we haven't presented, please reach out and send me a note. And I would love to talk to you about any of them, whether you think about it now or sometime in the future.
Okay.
So there's a couple questions coming through the chat that I want to speak to before we move on. So Andrew asked, is it 50% of trips or is it actually 50% of VMT that's attributed to residents rather than visitors? And here, the 50% number that I referenced is, and this is going a little bit into the weeds, but this is a technical working group, so hopefully you'll indulge me, is an estimate based on our model day and our travel demand model, which attempts to model all the travel activity within the region on an early or late summer weekday. And it's on that day that we're estimating that about just under 50% is attributed to residents. And then Gavin asked if second homeowner trips are covered under or captured under resident or visitor travel. So second homeowners are captured under visitor travel for those calculations. Other questions, comments, or thoughts?
I had one real quick, Dan. This is Erin Casey with Placer County, and back to the conversation on data, specifically as it relates to rentals and occupancy. The county is able to collect, because of the TOT reports that we receive, occupancy information, and we can break it out by unit type. So that helps give us some idea of what occupancy might be overall, including hotels, motels, single family residences, condos, et cetera. But then if we also want to look at that data for specific unit types, we can break it out. So for us, one way to understand what the occupancy of vacation rentals are is to break that data down by unit type, including condos, single family residences, and exclude things like hotels, motels. So that's been a helpful way for us to gauge occupancy, particularly over the last several weeks to months, and trying to understand that. And then we contract with Host Compliance, which is a vendor that helps us identify properties that are listed on online platforms. And we actually have an upcoming meeting to better understand what data they do provide us with data now, but we think there's more that they could provide. So that could be of use to this group in terms of understanding that, at least on the Placer County side.
Appreciate it. I'll follow up with you afterwards if you don't mind.
Not at all. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks so much.
This is Ken Caseman. I mean, I just wanted to reinforce that call for, you know, for information and data that, you know, I think is useful. In particular, the vacation rental data and the second home occupancy data are particular areas that we have struggled with getting good data throughout the region for. And so, you know, we certainly welcome any suggestions and any help that we can get, you know, to track that information down and get reliable source information for that.
Hey, Dan, I have one last question before I shut my mouth. Pardon my ignorance. And so, I mean, I shouldn't be asking this because, you know, I have been writing SB 743 on the transportation infrastructure side, but not on the land use. So how does this special generators are treated? Is there any clause in the SB 743 on the land use induced demand? Because yours is a visitor's place and any landfill, I mean, development is going to induce demand. So are there any particular clauses introduced in the bill, especially for special generators like, you know, Lake Tahoe or any other visitor tourist place? Did you follow my question or?
I
you. Can I actually add to that, Dan, before you provide an answer?
Sure.
There is an article on the CalCOG website, and I can provide I'll find the link and send it over. But you know, it talks about the gap in the scoping plan that was developed for SB 743, and it to me that visitor population and that impact to Lake Tahoe really falls under that gap and that mega region transportation issue that is actually not really evaluated in that analysis. And we actually did when I was in the CalCOG's leadership program last year, SACOG and MTC actually did a presentation to their board talking about how we could work together to address that gap that is more related to that mega regional transportation issue. There's currently, you know, not funding in the state plan for that. And, you know, it is an issue that from a policy standpoint that really needs to be addressed, quite frankly.
And so Daniel, has this being brought up to the Caltrans headquarters?
I don't think it has.
Well, actually, here, this is Nick. So we are participating with Caltrans headquarters and MUGS leading the effort to look at 743 from the state highway system side, not the land use side. And we have raised this issue, and it is getting some traction because there's other regions in the state that deal with this, like the Monterey Bay Area. So we are elevating this issue. There is nothing in statute in terms of acknowledging this type of travel behavior.
Uh-huh.
But we are trying to elevate it from a policy response in terms of Caltrans and what they are working on.
Okay.
In response to 745.
Have you been dealing with Elisa Baig or any other person from
headquarters? I've been dealing directly with MUGS, and we provided comments on the state strategy, and you know we're awaiting kind of that policy response and trying to craft that in conjunction with some other regions.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Thanks, Daniel.
So, Nick, that's great to hear that conversation is happening. I guess it'd be good to know how others could help facilitate that conversation and support that effort, because it's critical in this. And then I guess it's hard for me to understand how we put all of that burden on projects, and could we at least look at shifting that model if we were to, you know, be able to establish a cordon pricing system. You know, the state plan, the draft state plan is proposing, a fee-based congestion pricing as an option to mitigate VMT. I recently read a report that Seattle did that shows that congestion pricing, they studied around the world and showed that congestion pricing, it reduced VMT by anywhere from 10 to 44%. So I get a little concerned thinking we're putting mitigation onto projects when we have a path forward that could help put that infrastructure so desperately needed to support those projects.
Danielle, I think those are great questions. This is John Marshall. But they really kind of go to some later elements of the program that we'll be talking about, which is the kind of the project-specific analysis and how this all applies on a project scale. I think we're just getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, and I I could direct us back to Dan to kind of continue on with the presentation. I think these are all great, great points, and it's a really meaty issue, I know. So just stay tuned, I think, is the best answer. Dan?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we'll talk about how project level expectations later on today as the other part of the working group. But as John suggested, I'm going to try to bring it back to the task at hand for today, which is establishing the total amount of vehicle miles traveled in the region now. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here to talk about the sources of VMT data and how what potential estimates we have at our disposal to figure out how much VMT there is in the region today. So there's three sources, and these are all identified in your staff summary as well. Our travel demand model, Streetlight, and then Caltrans and NDOT estimates. So just briefly, I'm going to give a quick overview of what each of these is, and then provide the estimate of how much VMT they think there is in the region today. So the first is our travel demand model, which many of you are intimately familiar with from past working group meetings. But what it is basically is a geographic model of our region. It's got our full roadway network. It's got all the development within our region. And then we estimate the number of residents, visitors, external workers, and how they travel about that region. And we calibrate that with traffic counts in the region. So we know roughly the number of people that pass through a specific point in our region on a given day. And we use that data to refine our model and estimate VMT overall, as well as a whole host of other travel metrics. And we do this, we update the model at least once every 4 years. We just completed an update and parameterized the model for 2018. And we estimated that on the model day, which is defined formally as it sees on your screen, Monday through Thursday in the first 2 weeks of June, last week of August, middle two of September. So as these are time periods within our region where residents are taking their kids to school, I'm assuming schools were open, and there is still high levels of visitation. So we have a high amount of both resident and visitor activity. And we estimated that VMT on those days averages about 1.4 million.
So Dan, a quick question. So do you have four type of scenarios, or so a winter peak or winter season or summer season? So how did you accommodate? I mean, those are different, not even time periods, but different seasonal categorization, or I believe you have a tour-based model, right?
Yes, we've got an activity-based model, and it's currently calibrated just for that summer season. So that's what we're running most of the data on.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So the second potential source of VMT data that we've included is Streetlights. This is a big data source, if you will. So it's using smartphone GPS data from cars to actually get a more complete snapshot of overall travel on the roadway network. They estimated that they track about a quarter of overall vehicles or people traveling. And based on that, they generate estimates of VMT within the region. And one of the big benefits of exploring these big data platforms is that it's available not with sort of year or year and a half lag time, but within, you know, weeks to months. As opposed to over a year late. We've received a number of questions in the past around the overall accuracy of Streetlight. So I think people believe in the promise of being able to get a better snapshot of the overall number of travelers in the region. And there has been a fair bit of work both to refine Streetlight's estimates, but as well as to compare that to estimates from things like the Federal Highway Administration. And generally what they found is that the Streetlight estimates are quite accurate. So this graph on the screen suggests that they're about 95% accurate relative to a rough sample of overall travel from the highway network around the country.
So Dan, did you actually use any PEMS data to kind of
Yes, it's a good question. So PEMS is real-time Caltrans traffic counters. And we use the PEMS data both to calibrate our model and also to look at the accuracy of the streetlight assessments within our region.
Okay.
And did you use the INRIX platform that Federal Highways has provided to look at some of those as well?
We've not specifically used INRIX data to look at BMT. We've focused on INRIX data really to look at congestion-related issues.
And Daniel, so INRIX only provides the speed and the bottleneck locations, but they are not capable of providing the volume data. So,
yeah, I thought they had more of an analysis of the economic side.
Yeah, and on the operational front, they're very useful, but
Yeah, so the streetlight data platform also provides that link to the census, so you get overall, you know, a demographic profile of people traveling within the region as well. And so, to summarize the streetlight estimates for the region, so streetlight data is available for the last 4 years, complete years. It starts up in about 2016. And so here we've provided both the annual daily average throughout the year, as well as the estimate for the TRPA model day. And you can see, a couple things to note here. The streetlight estimate for the TRPA model day is roughly about the same as the estimate from our travel demand model, about 1.4 million. And then I think the other thing I'd point out is that the TRPA model day, the overall estimates within streetlight are a bit more variable than the annual average. And if you think about why that may be, so our model day represents about 20 days throughout the year, whereas the annual average is 365 days. So that our model day is far more sensitive to, specific perturbations like a weather event or an accident or a special event that we know heavily influence overall traffic volumes within the region. So the last source of data comes from the Highway Performance Monitoring System. And so this is, a national program that both the states and actually all states around the country are required to collect and report standardized data back to the Federal Highway Administration. And so each year they produce summaries of the overall level of travel within the region. So this is, VMT is one of these essential travel metrics that's important for roadway management overall, and certainly well outside the bounds of this discussion today. But this is another sort of third-party source of information. And so we have Caltrans estimates for BMT on the California side of the basin dating back to about 2000. Nevada, we have their estimates for the Tahoe region beginning in 2016. So it's only the 2016 and beyond estimates that we're showing here in the region. And again, so when we add those two estimates together, I think you see something around the same where we're getting right around 1.4 million. You can see 2018 is the annual estimate, again, lining up right around the same number that we provided last time. And as we started to think about how we use this information to establish an overall baseline for the region, we presented a couple of different options. So of course you could align yourself with one specific data source, or the conversations we've had internally is, how do you account for the uncertainty in VMT estimation? And potentially looking at multiple data sources to help better validate and arrive at a more accurate depiction of VMT within the region. So we presented here two options for sort of pulling that information together. So one option would be looking at the travel demand model estimate for 2018 and VMT, the streetlight estimate for that same region. And we presented it here again within the context of the other years for which we don't have travel demand model information for. And then as well as the option of combining those together. The same thing is possible with the streetlight and the HPMS data, where we could look at any individual year for a baseline and combine those two estimates, Or we could start to think about a multi-year estimate or developing a multi-year, a blended estimate, we call them, where we use both StreetLight and the HPMS data, average them all, and we get this multi-year estimate of overall VMT within the region. And I think one of the things that really stood out to us as we started to look at these different values for annual estimates is they're relatively consistent. So if you think of VMT estimates as being accurate within about 5% of the actual amount of VMT, acknowledging that we don't truly know exactly how far cars are driven within the Tahoe region. So these numbers are all roughly the same. We're looking at 1.4, 1.5 million, somewhere really tightly in that range. I'll pause there for questions before transitioning a little bit. Okay. So the next part of the presentation is really transitioning into how do we use all of this information and contextual understanding of what we're trying to do to actually establish a VMT baseline for use in target setting and establishing a new goal for our region or a new threshold standard. And so really we've laid out three questions, but the first three really inform the fourth. So the first question we focused around what VMT should we include within our standard and what VMT should we be held accountable for? And all of the estimates that we presented earlier account for all types of VMT within the region, be it recreation travel, be it day visitors, be it commuters, second homeowners, residents. They all account for any type of travel that anyone has done for any purpose inside the region. So I think that the question here and the suggestion is that we should move forward with a baseline that includes all of that travel within the region. That is, unless there's some reason that someone thinks we should be excluding a specific type of travel and VMT from our baseline estimate.
Dan, I have a question about the region.
Yeah.
Is the boundary of the TMPO in terms of total VMT the basin?
It is, yes.
So just to help me better understand it, if someone was commuting from, say, Sierraville to Kings Beach, their trip length would be the summit of 267 to where they arrive in Kings Beach.
That's correct. Yeah, the suggestion includes just including that amount of the trip length in the VMT standard baseline, but we would still account for that full trip length. So we've done a lot of work over the past year or so to try to understand exactly where people are coming from as they pass through. So we'd have the full accounting, but the standard itself would just be the VMT within the region.
And a resident who traveled to Tahoe Vista to work, that would be their trip length. You know, right. I'm just trying to understand how someone that's traveling maybe farther outside of the region on a daily basis or as a visitor basis would compare to someone traveling a shorter distance within the basin. So thank you for that clarification.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, so we would count if a resident, you know, was driving to Costco for an errand run or something like that, we'd only count the amount, the length of the trip until they got to Spooner Summit as part of this baseline.
Dan, this is Lucia from Carson City.
Yeah, Lucia.
Just a comment that, you know, I think you've done a really good job of explaining VMT and how we capture mode split of all trips, you know, what are vehicle trips versus transit versus non-motorized, and just, you know, whatever you set. I hope that the policymakers consider the amount of effort that it takes to get this data, and that, you know, as TRPA and all of the partners in the basin continue to do a really good job of improving transit and providing non-motorized connectivity, that mode split will shift over time. And so how that's taken account to get the vehicle trips will be really critical to making sure that your VMT calculations are up to date.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Gavin with the League of Save Lake Tahoe. So quick question, of all traveler types, does this also include freight? It was mentioned a couple times in the staff report and attachments, but I didn't see it really clearly laid out whether or not freight was included.
Yes, yeah, so to be perfectly clear, that all the VMT estimates include all travel onto the roadway network within Tahoe for any reason. So be it an Uber, a Lyft, a resident, a freight truck, a local delivery truck, all of that is included. And the suggestion is to continue to include that.
Dan, this is Stephanie over at Placer County. I guess I would say one more thing on freight. I mean, my understanding of the California 743, they are not focused on specifically on freight. And so that might be something where the standard that TRPA is looking at here may deviate from 743.
But does it specifically exclude that travel in its calculations?
I don't think it excludes it, but I definitely talks about passenger vehicles.
Okay. I think that's also, it's an important point to think about as we think about the next section that Melanie is going to lead in terms of aligning project level evaluation and what counts there and what the standards of significance are. But I think, having not heard any serious concerns with including all VMT, at least I don't think, I think we'll move forward with the idea that we're including all VMT within this baseline. Which really brings us to the second and related question in terms of which travelers we should consider when we establish this baseline. And, you know, I think I'd frame this question in the same way. Are there specific travelers that we should be excluding for some reason from the overall traveling population as we think about establishing this standard?
Nope.
That's consensus here as well. So I think we'll move forward. So we're both including all VMT in the overall estimate as well as all travelers. So number three, so this is the time period question. So which VMT, or should we restrict the time period for baseline setting purposes? So we've talked about two different sources that are readily available. And what we've suggested is that we should use annual average VMT, which really emphasizes reducing VMT at all time periods of the year and for all travelers. I think, again, I'd frame this question as, is there a reason that we should be excluding some time period of the year from our overall goals of reducing per capita VMT?
Dan, this is Eric. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please, Eric.
So I'm intrigued by both this question and your last question about what should be included.
Okay.
And I think I would benefit from, clearly you have thought about potential reasons for excluding types of travel and types of travelers. Clearly you've knocked this around in your head a little bit or you wouldn't be asking it. But I'm struggling to think of any example where I would say, yeah, let's exclude them for this reason. So can you please provide us with some examples of what you may have been thinking for why one of us would want to say, yes, let's do that? I'm really confused as to why you're even asking the question.
I apologize. I actually think it's a really good question. And one of the reasons that we're bringing the question to the group is, as we surveyed what other agencies are doing, one of the things we've noticed is there are a lot of specific targets or agencies that have adopted something like reducing per commuter VMT. So they have very, you know, specific targets or, trips to school VMT. And I think as we thought about that, what we really thought is that the overall goal for our program and for the transportation program and for establishing this new standard really is reducing the reliance on the automobile for all travelers in the region, for any region, for any time period. And that the first three questions here are about, it's reaffirming that idea that we really should be including everyone as we think about this and thinking about setting an overall regional goal and what is, you know, regionally appropriate as opposed to the specific goal for an individual program. And so hopefully that provides a little bit of context, because I think what we're really trying to reaffirm with these three questions is that that is our focus, that we're trying to reduce everyone's reliance on the automobile at all time periods.
Go ahead, Mia. Okay, quick question, Dan, Mia with Related California. I'm starting to think about the fact that VMT equals GHG. And because we now have more electric cars, let's say Teslas, you get up every time you're in Tahoe, there are more and more Teslas everywhere. Are we accounting, are you accounting, TRPA accounting for the future of zero emission cars? And, you know, and I would say Tahoe, because of the affluence, they're going to have more percentage of Teslas up there than perhaps Sacramento, for example. So I'm wondering, if is that a population you're considering, and is that something that might fall into this category of, to be included or not to be included?
It's a good question. I think, you know, the California state framework, so under 375, they do expect, you know, a large fleet transition, but the targets per each MPO actually generally exclude the larger transition of the fleet to clean cars. And so this is the targets I think you can think of there are actually VMT reduction targets of all types. And I think one of the reasons that they give for that is, you know, the preference for shorter trips and spending less time in your car, no matter what kind of car you're driving. And I think we think that is largely consistent with the Bi-State Compact that established TRPA, which directed us to reduce overall reliance on the automobile. So, you know, if we think about sort of the three-pronged objectives of establishing a per capita VMT reduction goal, we are really thinking that we're trying to reduce and create shorter trips of all types. Danielle?
Yeah, so I have to say I'm impressed by your explanations here. I think this is a lot of information, and it's difficult to go through. Could you help me understand basically, if you are including all of them, how you kind of look at their kind of fair share, I guess. To me, the visitor and impacts and the seasonal visitor impacts are just so extreme, right? Like the can you help me understand how you would move that forward and kind of address that, because I think there's a lot more GHG and a lot more traffic during those peak seasons. So just a little help there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, so I think just one thing, the question I think primarily that is before us today is which VMT to include, not the attribution of that VMT to any specific party. That said, you know, I think, you know, a number of the conversations we've had internally is that, you know, addressing VMT from a specific source or congestion requires identification of the different travel party types and purposes so that the solutions can be tailored to that. And I think as we go through these conversations and as Melanie talks about how we evaluate projects and what types of mitigation we're likely to consider from projects, I think that the time period question of when that travel occurs is likely to resonate more and more and become increasingly relevant.
Dan, this is Luke.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we adopted the first air quality standard, In 1982, there were 24 million people in California. Now there's 40 million people, and we're projecting a 24% increase by 2030. Maybe I got the date wrong, but another 10 million people. Whereas our inventory, whether it's residential or tourist or commercial, is static. So we don't have any growth per se, but the growth surrounding us is, I don't want to say cataclysmic, but it's certainly, you know, a tremendous impact on us. And, you know, I think it's important for us to recognize that our ability to generate growth internally is essentially zero. And we're experiencing such tremendous impacts from out-of-basin growth. And I just think that's a metric that we need to understand and have as part of our, you know, ultimate protocol.
Appreciate it. And I think that, you know, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think one of the reasons we are drawn to the California framework is that it does account for growth. And for us, I mean, I think it's not just growth. You know, we've seen in the past that our VMT threshold has gone in and out of attainment as a result of, you know, population decline or the decline of gaming in our region. And I think what we're looking to do with this new standard is really capture something that's more within our control by having it be a rate-based standard and really respond to the meaningful changes within our transportation and land use system within the region.
Well, and I respect that. I guess I'm trying to see if we can't somehow quantify, you know, what is it, what can we reasonably control when so much of what impacts us is external? And I just think, you know, we need to be able to explain that when we, you know, set whatever the outcome of the process is going to be.
If I could jump in here, Dan, I think that's our point here, Lou, is that the focus is what can we control within the basin? Once you've arrived within the Tahoe Basin, what is it in our transportation system that's going to help get people out of their cars? So VMT is going to help us in addressing what are our mobility needs within Tahoe. And so that's really the focus. But at the same time, from the standpoint of addressing some of the requirements under state law, we do have to look at all those folks that are coming in either from the Bay Area into Tahoe or from Reno, wherever they're coming from. But that's what we're trying to build upon right now. I think what Dan is trying to get to is, what is our baseline, which includes those visitors, whether they're overnight or day or whatever, and including our residents. I don't think it's fair to say that there will be no growth from the standpoint of what we're trying to accomplish in implementing our regional plan. We are truly trying to provide housing for a workforce so people would have a better opportunity to live within the basin than have to drive into it to work. And there are other opportunities we created by changing the commodities program. So again, we're trying to create a VMT standard that would help us. And then we'd be working on project-specific ways of reducing VMT with regards to certain kinds of redevelopment projects. But at the same time, we want those projects to go forward. So it is, I think, what we're trying to do here is just what is that baseline VMT that we're working from? And then we'll parse out all the little pieces as to what you're responsible for or how we're going to meet your needs within our transportation system.
Dan, this is Mia. I just wanted to kind of add one thought
you know, and I understand the need to set a baseline and a need to understand all of the transportation, but clearly so much of the transportation demand is from outside visitors, which is making the numbers go up, which then the solution always tends to be developers should pay impact fees. You know, developers should pay for X. And going to the redevelopment question, I just want to caution that the solution isn't making new development pay for the impacts of yesteryear. Because, you know, for the example of all the, you know, Airbnb houses, they're not paying a cent. And yet maybe they have, you know, let's just say maybe 50 people living in that unit, quote unquote, because of the time frame in which people are living there. So I don't know how to make this more equitable, but I just don't want this to turn into, well, we'll just front load it because we can, because the one thing agencies can do is set fees and set development parameters. I just want to caution the solution of all this should not just be on the backs of all new development that pays for all of the problems that have occurred prior to the new development. I just want to state that.
I think full agreement here. Yeah. Certainly that's something that sorry, go, Bill.
I'm most appreciative to have you on this panel because we don't want to do that. We don't want to have the redeveloper have to pay for all the sins of what we don't have here in the development of a transportation system. So I appreciate what you're saying, but what we're really just trying to get at, first of all, is what's our baseline, and then what is our target by the end of when Dan gets through with this, and then how we parse out through the project specific analysis is what is truly just the development impacts on that VMT. And in some of the redevelopment, as you pointed out, if we did it in the town centers and we provided workforce housing, we're probably gonna be reducing VMT. That'd be a good thing.
And just to clarify, under SB 743, affordable housing projects, 100% affordable housing workforce projects are exempt from VNT analysis. And I know that that is the case for TRPA as well. So I'm hoping that, you know, from a workforce, which is what I build, but I also think about the missing middle, which is super hard to build for, you know, even getting to that upper attainable a TRPA bonus unit level. It's really hard to build for that. And I'm just trying to think about different ways that you can encourage that type of homeownership development without having to overburden it with all this other stuff that comes to pass. And so maybe it's just clear exemptions. Maybe you create a zone that this is where you want all your, you know, town center development to be. You're exempt from any VMT, just like you would affordable workforce, make some kind of claim. And then anything outside in sprawl, outside your urbanized boundaries, you know, those are the ones that pay a little bit more. Just ideas, throwing it out there.
No, I appreciate it, because I think, and all of the suggestions are really related to the next conversation we're going to have after this, which, you know, right now we're talking is what should our overall goal be? And then Melanie is going to lead the discussion over the next three sessions about what are the appropriate structures to actually get us there in terms of what do we expect from developers, what do we expect from redevelopers, et cetera. So I'm sure Melanie will be digging deeper on all of those comments as we go forward. In the interest of establishing or hoping to establish this baseline, the fourth and final question wanted to bring to everyone today, and I'll actually skip the slide because I think it may be easier to think about it in terms of this slide, is the overall recommendation that we use the three-year average and insert that as the top part of our overall equation in working towards our new per capita VMT reduction goal. So again, you think about our work together as playing out over the course of three meetings. So the goal today is establishing this first number. What's the amount of VMT? And then next meeting, we'll talk about what's the overall traveling population that contributes to that. And following that, we're going to talk about what's the overall goal. And so the proposal before you today is to use the latest 3 years of data, which would be 2016 to 2018, combining the streetlight and HPMS estimates for VMT into a single 3-year running average. And we think that has a lot of benefit. We think using the multi-year approach reduces uncertainty related to short-term economic conditions or a good ski season or a bad ski season. And using two data sources that are both, you know, openly available. So it's not just me or someone at TRPA sitting behind the travel demand model telling you what the VMT number for a given year is. These are actually data sources that anyone can pull and assess how do we stand relative to our overall baseline and our overall goal. So I'd like to get people's feedback on using this this approach.
This is Gavin with the league. I had a couple questions about the time period still. You know, one that if I think they're related. The first one is that does using annual VMT, how does that work out? And I know this is our next topic, but with the project level assessment, if you're looking at daily trip thresholds or something like that, how does this annual VMT work with that? It seems like there might be some conflict. And then the second piece is kind of looking again forward, but more towards solutions, like what we're trying to do with this VMT. It seems like there would be value to doing a seasonal, a summer and a winter, or a peak and an off peak time periods, because there's going to be different tools to address the VMTs for those different seasons, or at least peak and non-peak. I didn't see any recommendations around those two things in the staff report. So basically the temporal conflict between project level and this annual baseline, and then the seasonality, if it's worth trying to look at like two different seasons.
No, I think it's a good question. So, I mean, rather than a conflict, I think we see an annual average as being more congruent with our overall goals. Because, you know, if you think about the existing framework and evaluation under a specific time period, you could imagine a project saying, oh, I don't operate in that time period, so I don't contribute to VMT. And I think, you know, we're interested in really having a holistic VMT accounting. And we think a project level, an overall goal that accounts for all VMT in the region, no matter when it occurs, is most appropriate in that framework. I mean, I think that said, you know, you raise a really important point that's probably more in Melanie's section, and it leads to our discussion about how do we analyze projects and, you know, what mitigation do we ask of projects, and really how do we design our transportation programs to address the specific VMT impacts that we're seeing or other impacts that we're seeing that may be more seasonal in nature. And I think just by establishing the goal as an overall annual goal, in no way precludes us from partitioning out or otherwise analyzing drivers of travel in any particular time period or from any particular source. And I think the expectation is that even though the overall goal is established to include everything, that we are really looking at those individual pinch points and designing programs to ensure that those are addressed.
Hey, Dan, this is John Marshall. Stephanie has a question on the chat.
Sorry.
Yep. Whether this is a rolling average baseline that we're proposing.
Thanks for bringing that up. Sorry, too many windows going on here. So we don't anticipate the baseline to be rolling. We anticipate the baseline to be established and then used to establish our target. What we have talked about is threshold standard or status relative to the threshold standard being evaluated as with a rolling baseline. So the 3-year average from those two sources. So, you know, 5 years down the road from now in 2025, we'll be using the VMT estimates from 2023, 2024, and 2025, and assessing that against the baseline that we've established here, the 1.45 million from 2016 to 2018. Sorry,
Dan, I had
that earlier, Stephanie.
Dan, I have a question about per capita. So does your, once you establish your base, the baseline is essentially created on all these trips, which are primarily generated by outside tourists that come in either for the day or maybe spend the night. Does your per capita number include the tourist visitors, or are you looking at the resident population?
No, it's a great question. I mean, that's the key distinction and the key modification that we're making, is that it would include everyone. So it's visitors, commuters, residents. And that's where I think, you know, you distinguish this goal from overall California state policy, and that ours is really tailored directly to Tahoe and the specific conditions that create our VMT. So the efficiency metric really would be a measure of how efficient we are at moving both visitors and residents around our region. So that number, and by the way, we're going to be discussing that number in far more detail next month. That's the primary discussion topic from the threshold standard establishment standpoint, but we are going to talk about estimating the total number, not just residents.
Hey, Dan, Andrew Ryan here. Following up on Mia's comment there, the denominator being the all travelers, that does seem to be a more equitable method to include everybody that's in the basin as the denominator. I'm still struggling with the idea that the trip lengths get truncated at the basin. And you had asked us if there was any trip generators we should exclude. I'm wondering if you considered asking the question in opposite, if there's anything we should be including that's outside of the basin. And part of me feels like there's an equity with looking at the lengths of the trips for people that are arriving to the basin, so that when we do make decisions with this model down the line, that we're capturing this entire trip that's made from someone traveling from farther to the basin and not just their portion of travel within the basin.
And I think maybe I just want to tease apart the suggestion. So what we're suggesting is, for establishing our goal, we include just the VMT within our regulatory boundary, so that, you know, that's really under our authority. But that, in no way precludes analysis of the overall trip length, and that is actually a specific requirement. So part of the recommendation, as it appears in the staff summary, is that we both continue to invest in further refining our understanding of how far people are traveling outside the basin as part of those trips, and designing programs to address those. But it's just that as we think about setting our goal, we limit that goal really to just what's in our jurisdictional authority.
Thanks for that clarification. Yeah, that does. But I do think it's really important to hold on to that other piece of analysis, because that's what makes the basin very hard to compete with nearby areas, right? Thank you.
Full agreement.
Dan, this is Lucia from Carson City. If we were in person, I feel like someone would kick me under the table, but I'm going to say this nonetheless. There was a Legislative Commission on Energy, Committee on Energy that I met, I think it was earlier this week, but my weeks are blending together right now. There's a gentleman that presented to the committee, and he had a point about gas tax, that not all vehicle miles are created equal. And his suggestion for solving transportation funding issues in Nevada was that you look at fuel efficiency of the individual vehicles. Not that conversation needs to get conflated with this conversation, but his point that vehicle miles aren't all created equal, I felt was a good one. And I understand that VMT and VMT per capita, there's some legislation around it. VMT per capita is very good at encouraging carpooling, encouraging alternative modes. But when we talk about the actual vehicle miles themselves, they aren't all created equal. The lady that asked a little bit ago about freight, large trucks have different impacts on the roads and the infrastructure with degradation of the asphalt than, you know, small vehicles. Likewise, heavy duty trucks that emit much more GHG per mile than, say, a plug-in electric, that those miles are different miles. And so I don't know if it's appropriate to conflate or complicate this at all, but I do see benefit, you know, when TRPA is looking at thresholds for different impacts, that there may be a benefit to looking at the difference between the fleet mix itself. Sorry.
No, I mean, you're 100% on point. I mean, I think, you know, what we've talked about at various times about, you know, should we exclude this VMT or that VMT? And I think what we keep coming back to is, you know, we are trying to increase, you know, we're trying to achieve three objectives. We're trying to reduce GHG emissions, which, as you said, is really a function of the, you know, the type of vehicle that's traveling. We're trying to implement the Bi-State Compact Directive to reduce dependence on the automobile, which in some sense is more fleet type agnostic. And then we're trying to promote compact development per the regional plan. And I think, you know, when we consider those three goals in concert, that's where we've gone back to each time. Let's include all VMT in this to ensure that we're accounting for all travel and trying to reduce all travel, but not lose sight of those individual goals. Because I think there are individual solutions that are tailored to each. You know, as you said, there, as part of an individual development project, you can imagine in Mel's discussion that part of the mitigation could be installing electric vehicle charging stations to encourage more electric vehicle fleet adoption. And I think, you know, that's one of those things that we'll get to as we work through that discussion.
Right on. Thanks.
Any other thoughts or comments on the establishment of this baseline using the three-year average?
Dan, this is Sophie Winslow with the Attorney General's Office. I just want to note that my office supports accounting for all VMT in the basin, in the baseline, and I think that proposal is great. And we hope that each distinct category of VMT will be discreetly tracked, such as freight. And I also have a question for you. You mentioned that the baseline will be used to establish the ultimate target. And I'm wondering if you can say a little bit more about how that process will unfold and what you expect the ultimate target to look like. For instance, I'm wondering if it will be a basin-wide target or something else.
Yeah, sure thing. So, I mean, I think the overall target setting process, so the three steps that we've imagined in terms of this group's input are on the screen today. And I think, you know, your office in the past has commented on the trouble that we've had with a baseline VMT from 1981 and the need to update the overall target with the best available data. And so that's what I think we're doing with this proposal. And I think in terms of how we imagine that target setting process playing out, we're imagining these first two meetings. So after today, we'll have an idea of the overall level of vehicle travel within the region. At the next meeting, we'll establish the contributing population. So then we'll have this per capita VMT for where we stand today. And then the direction we have from the Regional Plan Implementation Committee is consider a reduction target. So wherever we end wherever we are today for per capita VMT, we consider a reduction target from there. And I think that's the conversation we imagine playing out at that third meeting in October. And then, you know, to be very clear about the committee's role, these three pieces here in October all become recommendations to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. And then we'll go through that formal hearing process as well.
Thanks, Dan. And so would that reduction target be a basin-wide reduction target or something else?
Sorry, yes, we've thought about it as a basin-wide reduction target. So an account, it would be an overall reduction in per capita VMT, accounting for all VMT and all travelers within the region.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Right, to piggyback on that, so is the next meeting the establishing the population baseline? Is that where we're going to decide or give recommendations of what the capita is for 2018, like what the number of people is for 2018?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the same way, I mean, in terms of, these are all, I think, sort of overall process questions, so I'll just sort of clarify. So, you know, at this meeting, we summarized the available sources of VMT data and then brought a suggestion for how we should aggregate that to the most informed baseline for VMT. So we imagine we're going to do a similar thing for next meeting. So we're going to bring the best available data and estimates that we have for the overall number of travelers, and then bring that to you for recommendation for how we establish that number.
This is Gordon Shaw at LSC. Just a kind of comment on data validity here. First of all, relying on streetlight data or any other big data source essentially ties the TRPA process and standards to a third party that may or may not be around in a few years and may or may not change their process and the data they use. So just a note of caution that using that, I can imagine a judge a few years from now having to decide whether the streetlight data has changed and that changed the VMT estimate. We're kind of tying our wagon to a third party, and it's in the internet business, so it may or may not be here in a few years. And then the other part of that equation there is the all travelers part. And as people like Danielle Hughes knows, we've been spending a long time, many, many years, even trying to figure out the number of visitors on a peak day. Going to an annual factor like this means basically we need to figure out the total number of people 365 days a year so that we can average that out, and we all need to agree on that methodology. So that's a heavy lift in terms of getting good, valid information on both the numerator and the denominator.
I would like to second his Gordon's statement there. And I guess to me, this kind of goes to that question I had earlier of, can we change this in the future? Like, because I even, you know, I'll be glad to meet with you, Dan, and show you what I can give you from the parking management. And I would even be happy to have you join me on a call with the software system that I'm looking at, that if we do achieve a cordon pricing system that I could get. Because to me, that's if we get to that system, even if we didn't charge a fee, just having that system in place really understands the number. We should be able to accurately represent the daily number of vehicles in the basin at any time, every day of the year. And so knowing the number of people per car, you would know those per capita numbers. So I just want to make sure that we're setting ourselves up, even if this path goes forward now, that can we change that, knowing we could have our own constant set of data source to make these decisions on?
No, I mean, I think in responding to those both collectively, because I think, you know, Gordon raised some really good points, especially around like the reliance on a specific vendor being Streetlight. And that's something we speak to a little bit in the staff summary, and acknowledge the importance of doing the, you know, the 3-year annual average and rest, and also talking about how, where that average was established from, because as methods are refined in the future, or, you know, if Streetlight goes out of business next week and is replaced by whatever the next big thing is, you know, it would be important for, you know, the governing board and likely supported by committees like this to consider what that means for this standard and if we need to reestablish the standard or otherwise modify the standard. I think that said, you know, we last year adopted a new system for our threshold standards that basically said, we're going to have specific targets from now on. We're not going to have sort of wishy-washy baselines that say reduce 10% from some undefined value. So I think, you know, the challenge before us today is this the best available data? And is this the best for actually establishing the baseline for today? And I think,
Dan, this is John Marshall. Just want to do a time check. 3:00.
Yep.
And we have a big chunk to go that a lot of people seem to be interested in.
I appreciate it. Sorry for running over, Melanie. I think with that, I mean, I think we've heard mostly general support for this baseline and including all VMT. So absent any comments that I hear now, I think we'll move forward with that. And maybe even in the interest of time, give everyone a 3-minute break. Melanie, what do you think?
I'd leave it to the community. Would everyone appreciate a little break, run to the restroom or refill your water, or you just want to plug through?
So let's just say, I saw a couple of thumbs up. Let's say a 3-minute break. We'll resume again at 3:05. Thank you all. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk again shortly.
Okay, it's 3:05, so I will begin. And hopefully everyone is able to make it back to the screen or participate. So Melanie Sloan, Senior Transportation Planner with TRPA, working with Dan on the full suite of projects that have been discussed up to date. I put this presentation together anticipating walking step-by-step through all the components, but given the time we have left, and the amount of conversation that's already come into the project impact assessment level, and a little bit about the fee, I may go a little bit more quickly through some of the slides. However, if I skip over something or there's an interest in conversation, please do jump in. I know we've been using the chat, but some people have certainly unmuted and poked in where they had questions. I'm fine with either of those. I'll rely on Dan and Michelle to help me monitor the chat And if you want to unmute and interrupt with a clarifying question or initiate conversation, I'm open to that as well. So as we've discussed, this is coming down a level. We've been talking about the VMT threshold update at that regional level. Now we're going to talk about two tasks that I'm leading that really is focused at the project level. The project level transportation impact assessment and the air quality mitigation fee update. So I just want to take a moment, though we've touched on this quite a bit, just to reflect on the purpose of why we're doing this and why we're doing this now. One of the biggest reasons, of course, is about aligning and connecting. First, with the VMT regional threshold standard that we've been talking about, but also to make sure that the project impact assessment and the mitigation fee are aligned in the approach. Current practice, which I'll touch on in a moment, is tied to TRIP. And we're now shifting it to a mobility approach that's focused and using VMT. And there's also that alignment with the state of California. Dan touched on a couple of Senate bills and specifically SB 743, which I'll touch on a little bit further as well. And that's us working with our California local jurisdictions as they implement and comply with SB 743, looking to have that seamless process in the region, and also leveraging the research and the best practice that has been looked into and shared in guidance from the SB 743 work. And then, of course, as we've talked about in various ways, how do we accelerate the achievement of our regional plan and regional transportation plan and updated VMT threshold to create that walkable, bikeable, transit-friendly community? And so I'm going to spend most of today's discussion around that project assessment, current practice, California regulation and guidance that helps us understand a little bit more about that best practice, and then about the work we're doing. I'll do a very brief discussion of air quality mitigation fee because that topic will take up more time in future meetings with this committee. And that is shown in this timeline, which syncs up with the one that Dan shared during his VMT threshold discussion, and that we will be back in September and October and also going through a formal process in November and December. And you can see in September, for both the assessment and the fee, there will be more conversation, and I think a lot more conversation on some of the key points that have come up from many people in conversation so far. And that's around screening criteria. Mia, for example, talked about affordable housing. There's also some things she alluded to, as well as, are there areas that produce low VMT already, and should that also be considered if we screen projects, maybe located in specific areas? We'll have further discussion about those and other considerations, as well as mitigations, another thing we've talked about, and as part of that accelerating achievement goal and purpose, as well as thresholds of significance. And that's going to sound a little bit like this threshold standard. So I'll talk about the difference a little when I get to a slide or two further on. And then we'll talk about the air quality mitigation fee. And in October, we'll take back all of that we've heard and been working on and provide some recommendations for this committee. So currently, what happens in Tahoe for project assessment? Well, we have Chapter 65 of our Code of Ordinance that defines development such as development, redevelopment, uses TRIPS to calculate if a project has a significant impact, and then if it does, stipulates a traffic analysis. And that traffic analysis does further evaluation of things like air quality and level of service, that intersection or roadway performance for vehicle flow. But it also talks about regional VMT. And then we at TRPA created a VMT interim guidance to help clarify and make consistent how that VMT calculation would happen. In regards to the project level assessment, Chapter 65 also talks about fees and mitigation measures, and sounds familiar. And certainly, you can see the parallels and the work we're doing here on both of those fronts. Specifically about fees, Chapter 65 describes the collection and distribution distribution, who may use them and for what purposes, and what those projects have to be consistent with to be eligible for funding. And it also calls out a discussion around revising the fees over time as well as credits. And this will be where I'm going to finish talking about the mitigation fee program and just really say, as I went over in the schedule, that you know the work plan will become more developed in subsequent meetings with these groups. And it's really about aligning and connecting with that mobility framework and using VMT as that demand variable. And to do so, we will need to complete a nexus study to develop that fee. That'll be more discussion in September. So jumping quickly into California regulation and guidance, we've talked about SB 743 went into effect July 1st for the California jurisdictions and in our jurisdictions in Tahoe. You'll see those goals. We talked about them already, lowering GHG emissions, developing multimodal transportation networks, diversifying land uses, and replacing that level of service, that evaluation of roadway performance for vehicles with VMT. And it also looks at projects both for what they develop, they generate in VMT, as well as their effect, that cumulative VMT impact. And then to help California jurisdictions, the Office of Planning and Research in California put out a technical advisory, which was an attachment to this packet. And in that, it discusses methods for calculating VMT, significance thresholds, and mitigations, and makes recommendations around those standards of significance. And so I want to just take a moment here to tease apart that, because it can be confusing. We're talking at TRPA about this regional VMT threshold, and then at this project level, there's guidance and terminology that we're carrying forward that California has coined around standards of significance. So at the regional VMT threshold level, which Dan talked about, that's really the goals to attain and maintain through the regional plan, the regional transportation plan, the environmental improvement program, and in some part through development. And then California coined the standard of significance term, and that's really how to assess a project for its VMT. Another way I think of it is it's the standard of significance is the ruler by which projects will be measured. And if the ruler finds that the project is significant, similar to our current practice here at TRPA, you know, mitigations and fees may be in order or better design. That goes, jump in.
Melanie, this is Danielle. So let me ask you this, I read through all the, the CEQA guidelines, mm-hmm. information. I've, been on some of the OPR calls and asked them as well, the guidelines are very heavily focused on urban areas, mm-hmm. and, don't really in many ways work for Lake Tahoe and our region. And so how do you plan to make sure that it's set up in a functional manner for the basin?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question, Danielle, because it is an important point of conversation and something that will influence what I'm seeking input from this committee today, but also really considerations as we move through those other key components for project impact assessment. And you're absolutely right, and Dan touched on this as well in his section, SB 743 was developed for more urbanized area where residential and office or employee focused land use development projects really were what drives VMT. And Tahoe is very different. So that is why this work is referencing the research and advice of SB 743 and technical advice, but really needs to do additional work to understand what is most appropriate for the Tahoe Basin and the types of projects we would see, plans we would see, and appropriate mitigations for that. So it's an excellent question, and it really does highlight that we wouldn't recommend adopting what you see from the guidelines from the Office of Planning and Research necessarily without all this additional thought and consideration. And the types of topics that I'll get into in just a few more slides will help with that as well as future meetings. And so that's a really nice segue as well to the fact that because we were updating our VMT threshold standard and considering aligning the project impact assessment and mitigation fee with it, to understand, because our California jurisdictions are also working to comply with SB 743, there was this really great opportunity to collaborate. So we're leading with Placer County, California, and working with Fair and Peers as the consultant to do analysis and recommendations for this project assessment in the region. And to Danielle's point, to really think about what is both appropriate and you know, most useful for Tahoe. So attached to your packet were four memos. They're in bold in this list here. And I just want to say also that we'll review and I'll seek key input from this group on topics that have come up from a few of those bold memos. But know that, as I said, additional conversation about screening criteria and the mitigations, as well as that tricky concept around thresholds of significance, will happen as additional work happens between now and the next meeting of this group. So we'll be bringing more information and seeking more input from this group around those. So let's just dive into what the work that has been done. So the first thing Fair and Peers did was assess what types of tools were available to assess projects for their impact to transportation. And I will say that from that initial analysis, the Tahoe model, the Tahoe activity-based travel demand model, was determined to be the best tool available to do so. And then they recommended that we conduct a few additional tests just to further validate the model's potential. And those tests are something the project team has been working on, and I'm hoping to receive some thoughts and input from on this group. And so what are some of those important things about those tests? We want to make sure that they're characteristic of projects that we typically see or anticipate seeing in the region. We also want to make sure they have characteristics such as location and size, maybe it's square footage or number of residential units, for example, as well as we want to be able to make sure we're testing at least one project that the model should identify as having a significant impact, you know, something that we would need to further look at for mitigations so that we know it will be able to identify those projects when it's live. And then we also know that this is really, as I said, looking at typical projects or anticipated projects and expect that unique projects such as the event center that we recently had come through in the South Shore, or perhaps a ski hill expansion, those really unique projects would continue to be assessed on a case-by-case evaluation, and that would be separate from this process here. So in your packet, there was a list of eight potential projects that have been considered. And these were identified, as I said, from typical or anticipated projects, but also based on recommendations from Fair and Peers around the types of projects we might want to be considering. I've highlighted three here because since the packet was shared, additional conversation from the team has led us to modify the list. And so for number three, we identified that as probably being a good one to increase the units on to see if the model would be able to evaluate it as having a significant impact. And so you'll see on the next slide of the shortened list, that has changed from 10 to 50 units. Now that may not be what we anticipate to see as a development project. It's really to test and further validate the tool. The bottom two, number seven and eight, are recreation and transportation projects. And in conversation with the team, it seemed that those were better to be assessed as mitigations. And so you'll be revisiting these types of projects and discussions around them when we get to mitigations in future meetings. So that leads...
Oh, Melanie, yeah. Danielle again, can you go back? Mm-hmm. So I get where you're going with the attractiveness factor. Can you maybe just give me a little bit more information on what you're doing with the cost factor piece for parking management?
Yeah, so when we shared this list with you, it was us trying to understand how might we be able to evaluate these types of projects, parking management, for example, knowing that these are policies and programs that are being either advanced or planned for in Placer County and in the region wide through the regional transportation plan. But additional conversation, as I said, thought that this is more along the lines of mitigations. And there's a lot of research and data, and I think you've even quoted some earlier in today's discussion about the potential to reduce VMT and these ranges that data and research have provided around those. And that's probably the better way to think of those as opposed to trying to make the model through a cost factor approximate VMT reduction.
Okay, can we have a meeting prior to our next meeting with this group and maybe look at this a little bit further?
Talk about parking management further?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let me just write that down quickly.
Hey, Melanie, this is Gavin with the
lead. Hey, Gavin.
Just real quick framing question on this. Are these case studies, it wasn't clear, is this for calibration? Are you looking for projects that have already been built, for projects that are going to be built within the time frame of this update, or for theoretical projects?
Yeah, theoretical projects. But I did base this list on a couple of things. Some are projects that may have recently been completed and represent projects we anticipate to continue to be completed. For example, Placer County has been receiving interest in number 6, these small mixed-use developments, not quite to the extent of what Mia developed in King's Beach, but something with similar characteristics, but on a smaller scale. And so that is something that they've received a lot of interest, either submitted applications or early discussions. And it's also the type of project we would like to see on a regional level, these kind of town center, multi-use projects. Others represent things that we anticipate might happen over the lifespan, you know, certainly thinking of our RTP and the time frame of that. For example, commercial redevelopment in Myers, number 5, is another one that we would anticipate. That residential units, employee residential units, number 3, that definitely made the list because we have concerted focus on that region-wide, and Placer is also trying to advance workforce housing, specifically on the North Shore and town centers. So a fairly long-winded response, but they represent kind of typical based on what we've received and also what we anticipate or are trying to encourage. And I don't know if I answered the first part of your question, so let me try to do that in case I haven't. You asked if it was to calibrate the model or what have you. It's just to further validate. You know, Ferrin Peers analyzed the model documentation from the model update, which also included validation tests. And this is just to further that work. It's kind of like a belt and suspenders approach.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah. Well, as we move forward here, I would recommend taking, you know, including a couple projects that are currently in the pipeline.
Okay.
I mean, I think that at the Y, the affordable housing project at the Y, as Mia stated, will likely be exempt from a VMT analysis and potentially CEQA, but it would still be great to validate that affordable housing projects are in fact VMT neutral or benign.
Mm-hmm.
Project is kind of going through about the same time frame as this whole VMT package.
Mm-hmm.
There's also for recreation, the Tahoe City Cross Country Lodge expansion project that's currently under environmental review.
Okay.
So I think it would be, so the, you know, kind of current projects to truly ground test it and see if these tools, how accurate these tools are.
Okay.
Really, really helpful. And along with that, anything that we're considering screening out. So local serving retail, again, affordable housing, a couple other categories, but maybe trying to identify some projects like that that help us decide if screening these projects out is realistic for Tahoe.
Okay. And that's exactly the feedback that I'm hoping to get. And this is the perfect point for it. So though I've reduced this list, it's certainly not the final list, and these types of recommendations will help us get to that point. So thank you so much, Gavin. And anyone else have thoughts or comments on types of projects or characteristics, location, or other criteria?
Hi, yeah, Melanie.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, Melanie. Andrew Ryan here.
Hi.
One of the thoughts I had was, and this is something that happens to me fairly regularly, is I will have a client that's looking at a commercial development in, let's say, Kings Beach, and then they also pressure test that idea, you know, in Verdi. And okay. Typically, Verdi may win out for a number of reasons, but it would be interesting to see, relative to VMT, what happens, you know, with a 15-employee company that develops in a town center or an industrial portion of the area plan compared to if they develop in a nearby area and then commute to Tahoe.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
that, Andrew. Yes, that actually kind of goes nicely with what I was going to say, just making sure that we're looking at the different types of users associated with each of these and their relative, impact on those resources.
So Andrew, you like Andrew's recommendation, Danielle, having some employee.
I think it's employee, it's our visitor, and even defining our visitor with the day user in mind. Especially when you're starting to use parking management as a tool.
Our mitigation tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that does kind of preface the second point I'm hoping to get some feedback from this group on. But I don't want to jump there until everybody's had a chance to provide input. Any other comments or suggestions?
Melanie, this is... Go ahead, Gordon.
I love it.
thank you, Sophie. Just a quick comment. As the firm that does so many of these kind of studies in Tahoe, and by the way, hoping that the world aligns with Mia's version of the world that affordable housing is exempt from doing VMT analysis. Half of what we do seems to be some kind of a special event venue or an event center or something like that. That is just, it doesn't fall into these categories. And it really is kind of a one-off of looking at just how many people are coming to a specific venue. So I would hope, whether it's that or a park, or you know, winter recreation or something like that, that we have one that's a special event.
Okay. We have, you know, as a learning tool within the project team with Placer and Fair and Piers, we continually use, you know, cross-country ski development as an example to play it at other questions as well. So it's definitely well heard. Other, I heard there was a little joust for the mic there.
Yes, Melanie, this is Sophie with the AG. I'll just jump in quickly.
Yes, please.
I agree with what Gavin was saying a moment ago. We think this is a good list, but it should be based on past projects and or anticipated projects. And we also think that more is better. The more you can analyze here, the better. Thanks.
Thank you for that. Anyone else? Okay, given time, I'm going to go forward. A question did come up earlier about the slides. We will share these with attendees following the meeting. And I'm sure Dan will say this when he closes. I'm going to say it before I reach the end of my slides too. I'll just say it here. Certainly questions and comments are welcome beyond this meeting as you have time to review the materials or things pop into your head afterwards. But I appreciate the conversation we're having right now. So that second piece that Farron Pierce has looked at and that I'm hoping to get input from this group on are VMT metrics. So, we've talked a little bit about per capita with the threshold as well, and this is something at the project level again. So, there are a lot of VMT metrics, and as Danielle pointed out when we were talking about the recommendations from California's OPR office, they were focused on residential and office, and they did have something about retail as well. And so we want to certainly use research and recommendations that are out there based on most recent data and analysis, but we also have to make sure that they're relevant to Tahoe, and that's come up. I need to belabor this point with this group. We understand that the metric is going to be really important. And when we say appropriate for Tahoe, it's both the traveler, we've talked about this, day use visitor, resident, and how do you even define a resident? Is the part-time resident, the seasonal resident, you know, included and so forth? But it's also for the types of projects and plans that are coming up. And that was well heard when we talked about what should be part of validation tests. So keeping that carrying forward into the appropriate metric as well. in general, in the world of metrics, there are two types, absolute and efficiency. Absolute being, you know, like a total VMT, and efficiency being that number by ratio. Dan did a great job talking about the threshold and really laying that out in a nice graphic format. Again, I think this group is probably okay with understanding that concept. We are thinking the efficiency metric would be the best for the region. We have data and methods to be able to do so, but it's also the best way to understand that full array of impacts a project would happen or would have. And I think this group seems to understand that as well from comments we heard through Dan's presentation and as we continue the conversation in this segment as well. So we shared a list of metrics that are things to consider. And I kind of alluded a little bit just a moment ago to the fact of, you know, different projects may even have difficulty in determining the appropriate people and how, you know, for the resident, for example, how do you define that? How do you capture that accurately or things like that? So this type of, you know, what Dan talked about, all travelers, are we thinking similarly here? We have the potential for, you know, service population. That would include day use visitors, overnight visitors, residents, whether they're seasonal or year round. That's one potential metric you might consider. And that might be appropriate when we looked at those types of projects that have mixed uses, for example. Recently, and not part of your packet, we had been looking at what the town of Truckee had done, because instead of using this per capita, they did a per land use equivalent. So say per 1,000 square foot of commercial floor area or number of residential units. And what that does is it doesn't require you to calculate the people. It's really linked to the use and the size of the project. So that may be a simpler approach and one that I've thrown onto the list that we shared with you in the packet and is represented as the last bullet here. So we've talked and touched on this a little bit. I'm interested in throwing this back to you based on this list or other thoughts that you have, thoughts and recommendations, additional things to consider around VMT metrics for assessing project impacts.
Again, I think it's, we still need to define that further, that, you know, the visitor further than just visitor.
And so would you feel comfortable then if we did a service population, because it includes everyone, like all travelers, similar to what Dan was talking about earlier, since yeah, that visitor is still a nut to be cracked?
I think it's fine, as long as we see this, how that impact is applied, or that mitigation is applied, right? Like, I just think that there are different, you know, I mean, I'll just take King's Beach, for instance. Uh-huh. You know, King's Beach hasn't, you know, gotten out of the 2007 recession even before COVID hit. The parking in that town is heavily affected by the day user and the people recreating at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore limits the opportunity for those businesses to utilize that resource.
Mm-hmm.
And so assuring we're accounting for the correct means to mitigate per each of those is why I'm wanting to further define it.
Yeah. So I do, from a brief conversation, I do understand that one of the reasons the town of Truckee went for unit of development was because of the trickiness of, and, you know, capturing or segmenting the various populations, you know, whether visitor, day visitor, resident, and so forth. And that's that simplicity using unit of development. And I'm curious, would that, and until that question is answered, would that be of interest?
Hmm.
No, I think we have, you know, become, I think the awareness of the impact of recreation on VMT has become more acute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you even look at this summer where restaurants, you know, have no indoor seating on the California side, and yet visitation is incredibly robust, you know, gaming isn't driving that. Recreation, I might say some gaming is recreation, but gaming numbers are in the toilet. Mm-hmm. But visitation to recreation sites are, you know, at probably near record, if not record levels. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have been able to strike the balance of what is really driving VMT vis-a-vis development. It seems to me that we have, even though our awareness is heightened, we haven't fully quantified the impact of recreation on VMT and have focused more on development on VMT, which I think mm-hmm. is probably not the right focus based on, you know, what we see. Mm-hmm.
So Lou, let me just follow up to that question. And I hear what you're saying and alluded to it a little bit in the segue in that, you know, there's a variety of ways we at TRPA see the VMT threshold standard update being attained and maintained. And development has some small part in that. It is not the only, and it's certainly not, it is definitely not the only, right? And it may be only a small component. I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying, you know, it is a piece of the pie. So how do we address that pie? If the larger picture, sure, at the regional level is around recreation, and yet we still have development, how do we both help support development, like we've heard both from many people in this meeting, including those who do that for work and wanting to see that certainly happen in the right ways? And we have this VMT linkage. And so if it is development and if we keep development in its proper proportion, we still should try to find some way to represent it appropriately.
No, I don't disagree. I guess I would say most of the development that we see today mm-hmm. is some form of redevelopment, which is converting existing uses to new uses. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, whether you're taking a TAU and, you know, constructing a condominium.
Sure.
You're getting credit for those trips. And you're really not creating more capacity. I mean, we could argue this in a micro scale, but, you know, most of the conversion has generally demonstrated that we're not generating more trips. Mm-hmm. What generates more trips are more visitors, and what's generating more visitors typically is recreation. And that's the transition that, you know, we have been experiencing. We're becoming more of a recreation destination. And I just think we need to be cognizant of that impact and how we are going to mitigate it, deal with it, and, you know, fairly allocate, you know, the burdens.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I feel like I just spoke over someone.
Sorry. This was Danielle. I was just, yeah. I mean, I guess I'd add to that as well is that, you know, if you look at the bill, it's based on assumptions that populations are growing and that's why they moved forward with this approach where our populations have been, you know, historically on a downward trend. Yes, we're in a crazy time right at the moment mm-hmm. That I think is certainly going to shift things in the, at least over the next, you know, 5 years. I would love to see people stay and have a more full-time population. that's still to be determined. So, mm-hmm. you know, how do we apply it again relative to the impact?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for that. So I think
I have a question about the last bullet. And it, just because of what Mia said earlier and the prior discussion, are we trying to select because we're focusing on the project specific mitigation methodology or tool, how we assess VMT. If we use everything, then we would include the day user, which we have no authority over as far as TRPA is concerned. They come and go. But if we do the VMT per unit of development, it seems like then we focus in on what is that development's impact on VMT without having to get into the whole issue of the other things that drive our transportation systems, which is the visitors, the overnight visitors, and maybe even the, because the commuter or the employee would be, wouldn't it be caught in the VMT per unit development if we built workforce housing for people that are working in the basin? That might reduce VMT because we're eliminating a long trip from, say, Minden or other places. Is that because that's what Truckee does? That they gave them more specificity in focusing in on those projects that really were creating the parking, vehicle miles traveled issues versus just trying to tease out on your development what you're responsible for, or sometimes we call it what's your fair share, which I think drives developers like Mia crazy. Why am I the fair share of the overall transportation problems? You've got TRPA. I'm trying to understand that last bullet, because that may be the nicest one of all of the metrics, if that's just focused on the specific details of that development that would exclude the second bullet, which would include all travelers.
So Bill, I would, much of what you said I think is fairly accurate, and the appeal of it is why, because we discovered it and discussed it since the packet went out, we thought it was worthwhile throwing onto the list despite not having included it in the packet for much of what you said. So I'm going to...
Melanie, this is Danielle again. I guess I would like to maybe look at a way that we could work with, talk to Caltrans with their draft plan, see how they're planning to apply cordon pricing to VMT reduction a little bit, because I actually feel like we can help to capture that day user impact if we were to consider that. So take the focus off of the project as much. I think it all has its fair share, but it's how we go about it.
Yeah. So I think you brought that up a little bit earlier, and perhaps Dan, because of his work with that Science Center project around capturing travelers and including day use visitors, which this committee will also review in September or, you know, hear more about. I think that may be the place where we can find out more information, and perhaps it will inform this discussion. But I would also say, to continue on Bill's point, Gordon, I don't know if you'd feel comfortable, since you worked with the town of Truckee in development of their metric, if you might have anything to offer or add into the discussion around that last bullet.
The concern that we ended up dealing with in Truckee is, you know, when you're getting to VMT per capita, you have to make some judgment call about a dwelling unit. Is it going to be second home? Is it going to be primary home? And that got us into pretty uncomfortable territory, because no one knows 10 years from now what proportion of the housing is going to be second home versus permanent. It also got us down this rabbit hole of comparing different commercial property projects, because there are some commercial projects. And, you know, the example that we talked about yesterday, on one hand, you could have a furniture store that has, you know, 10 trips per employee per day, or a real estate office or something like that. On the other hand, you could have a convenience market that has 200 trips per employee per day. So a VMT per employee gets you into a lot of trouble. So that's where the town of Truckee ended up with saying, let's just, when we have this issue for CEQA issues of, you know, a particular development come along, then we'll require the developer to do some analysis of similar projects and come up with an average there, and then compare the VMT per, say, 1,000 square feet of a commercial development based upon that.
This is Gavin with the League. I think, thanks, Gordon. That was really helpful. The town of Truckee, the description of this VMT per unit of development that they had in there for, you know, the couple council meetings was really interesting. And it seemed like a really good idea to me at first. I still think it's worth considering. But my bigger question is, you know, the SB 743 guidance, which I think makes good sense in this case, talks quite a bit about making sure you're doing apples to apples comparison so that the same metrics are used for the threshold, for calculating effects, and for mitigation. So if we're looking at per capita for the threshold and then either absolute or per unit of development on the project level, it starts to get really, really hard in my mind to make those things all work together. So maybe you've given some thought to that and could explain how that would work.
Sorry, I'm just writing a note.
Melanie, maybe I can jump in there for a second.
Okay, thanks, Jen.
Also, just with a quick time check, so we've got about 12 minutes left. I think we only need about 2 minutes to wrap up, so we've got about 10 more minutes for this discussion. But just to your point, Gavin, I think this 743 consistency check or apples to apples check is slightly different than the overall threshold standard that we were talking about earlier and doing the annual per capita number. And I think there's reason to believe that if you consider the overall VMT impacts of a project throughout the year, no matter how you quantify that in terms of the metrics that Melanie has presented here, that any of those options would work from a project evaluation standpoint to drive better project design and would support the achievement of the per capita threshold standard.
Yeah, again, it's one component of multiple ways of attaining and maintaining, and this is identifying how the project itself is going to be addressing that. We still have implementation of the regional transportation plan or regional plan policies and programs that may see other shares, but still all working together and in concert. And like we said in the beginning, trying to do that alignment with the focus towards that mobility approach. And I think this would still do that.
So in like a practical sense, like maybe an example, how would, on the project level, looking at a per unit of development impact and mitigation, how would you take that information and apply it to the regional per capita annual cap to like see the effect?
So what I would anticipate is a project would be evaluated. And so, for example, using Town of Truckee, their standard of significance, which is a conversation we still have to have in future meetings with this committee, they've decided that the type of land use has to, the new development by type of land use per unit of development has to be less than existing, and they follow that OPR guideline similarly, using like we're aiming for 15% reduction from existing, though that guidance focuses on employment and residential, it's still that 15% will get us, you know, that's what's shifting the whole state towards achieving that climate plan and the goals around GHG. So similarly, you would look at your town, and we could certainly look at areas, like Mia had suggested, and our focus at TRPA at town centers, you know, you may have different areas that you apply differently, but in general, the town of Truckee used its entire town and said, you know, you're okay as long as you're 85% or less of a tip, you know, a similar unit of development by land use type. So it's still reducing VMT.
So then you'd expect to see basically the same 15% per capita reduction as a result of that?
Except you're looking at it by land use developments. You're looking at number of units or square foot of the commercial area. Instead of a person, you're just using that equivalency of development.
Right. So again, then how does that roll up into the regional per capita? Like, is there any way to track? I mean, I guess what I'm asking, is there any way to track on the project level if you do?
And what its contributions to support.
Yeah, what its contributions to the regional goals are.
Yeah, yeah. So I would imagine that we would be able to calculate that. I'm wondering if Dan might be able to articulate better than I could.
Yeah, I was going to jump in there. I mean, I think the contribution is the same. I think, you know, the key nuance or point of difference is what Gordon pointed out, that I think if you think of statewide policy in California overall and a single unit of residential development, there is an implicit assumption that that unit will be occupied. And in our specific context, the issue is we don't know exactly how each unit will be occupied. We don't know if that's going to be a resident. We don't know if it's going to be a visitor. We don't know if the visitor is going to be there once a month, once a year, or, you know, the entire summer. And when we move from per unit of development to resident, employee, visitor, there are, you know, a suite of embedded assumptions that you need to make about the project and its design that make evaluation a little bit more difficult. So I think that, you know, the intuitive appeal of the unit of development of approach is that it removes that level of uncertainty and the assumptions that would be necessary for us to evaluate projects in that kind of manner.
Thanks.
Hi, Melanie. This is Andrew here.
Hi.
The 743 has screening criteria, you know, for smaller projects that would be exempt for looking at their VMP. I think theirs is, 200 new trips in a commercial town center, and then TRPA has some guidance on around 100. How does that factor into this project level assessment?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We do have, as I quickly touched on in our Code of Ordinances in Chapter 65, based on trips, determination of levels of impact of a project. This process would revise and update those, and we know for certain it will revise using, instead of trips, VMT, but determining further what those thresholds are, as well as screening criteria. So those are to be determined. Will they be, determining a certain VMT threshold or a proportion like OPR is recommended, or, those are the conversations in September.
Gotcha. Thanks for that clarification. Mm-hmm. I did want to add a little bit more to the conversation on recreation.
Sure.
And, you know, especially as it pertains to Kings Beach, since I know this area fairly well. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this wonderful beach, and it is free of charge to go use the beach. And then we have an abundance of parking that's free, either in formalized space or ad hoc as well. And so that free beach in the summertime and the access to that beach really seems to be the driver for all our trips and congestion and travel that's happening around that. With a project level assessment, there should be some level of just hard clarity that you might not actually be able to adjust VMT with a project by augmenting a project or reducing its intensity based on its land use to actually see any change in VMT when you have a draw like the recreation of the beach and abundant free parking.
Hi, I would really like to second. This is Eric Young with Rusher County. I really appreciate that comment and Lou's comment earlier. And clearly Melanie's been really open about that this is a small part of the bigger package that we try and get to, you know, that the whole regional transportation plan has got some other projects and programs that hope to get at this. And this idea of reviewing development is specific is a small part of it. But I think that the comments that we're getting make it a really legitimate question to ask just how small of a part is it. I think we need some a full disclosure or some full understanding about how much bang for the buck are we really going to get for all of the traffic studies that every developer has to do, all of the work and effort that has to be put in to a single project that we're creating, we're working on, we're going to put on everybody to have to do this. What are we really going to get out of it? And we're going to get a little bit out of it, but I have to question whether, you know, just how much of regulating and mitigating the impact of development is really going to move the ball forward for us. And I don't think it's an illegitimate question to ask that. I think that some of the things that Lou and Andrew and others have brought up today are really making me question, how much the other things that are recognized in the transportation plan and the regional plan are really the issue, are really the driving thing that we need a working group around. VMT has just been on our backs for years now, trying to figure out, you know, what do we do with it? What does it mean to us? How do we apply it? And I think it's starting to get to be a good question as to what is the bang for the buck that we're really getting out of all this work.
And Melanie, really quickly, Peter Kratz with Placer County Public Works.
Hi, Peter.
Yes, I would agree with Eric and Andrew and others. I would just quickly say, I know we're trying to close the meeting, but I just want to second or third that level of perspective of this is one piece of the pie. And that one example for Kings Beach that Andrew brings up is that we are woefully behind in the North Shore part of Lake Tahoe with parking management tools. As Andrew correctly pointed out, parking is really easy. It's too easy. We lack enforcement. We lack paid parking. But we are making headway with our Resort Triangle Transportation Plan and identifying these tools that we so desperately need to deploy, hopefully next year, and really help move the ball on this issue of kind of, it's a lot of things that need to come into place, and we can't make them all come into place at the same time, but parking management is one of those big things that keeps coming up in these meetings and other meetings that mm-hmm. I know in Placer County, we really need to move the ball on sooner rather than later, and that is a high priority for us in this whole big effort.
Okay. Thank you for chiming in, Eric, Peter, Andrew. That's all important. I definitely heard clearly that people are interested in hearing a bit more about what we think the potential impact project development might have. I would just like to say two things and then move to close. Your input has been very helpful. The conversation was really great, and I know we were in a little bit of a time crunch to do so. So thank you so much for sticking through a long meeting and providing some really thoughtful conversation and interest. I really look forward to having continued conversations on these topics and others to get these both moving forward. One thing I just want to reiterate is the process of working with Placer County and developing this project impact assessment includes development of a tool that would be forward-facing. So project applicants could at any time, even before submitting an applicant, they just have an idea, be able to submit the characteristics of their project and be able to understand how it would be assessed, if it would be significant, and what mitigations they could incorporate or better design, for example, to get within, to no longer be significant. And so there is a significant time savings and potential cost savings that transparency will provide. And I apologize for not really hitting that point earlier. And I do think that might address some of your concern, Eric, and that I also heard from Peter. And then last point is, you know, we're all in the region and we're all in planning one form or another, but the reality is things are going on simultaneously, like the Resort Triangle Transportation Plan that Peter brought up that may be addressing things. And so we just have to understand we're in a moving environment and each of us are moving balls forward. And I really appreciate your help doing so with this project level assessment. So thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Dan to close us. Thanks so much.
Mel, if you just want to go to that last slide of the
next one. Oh, sure.
I'm sorry, I can do it. I got it. I just wanted to second, I mean, really everything that Melanie just said there in terms of thanking everyone for really being involved and active listeners and participants in today, because I think we've gotten a ton of really useful advice. We got some really good advice on moving forward the VMT baseline and a ton of useful things to follow up on in terms of identifying the overall population baseline that we'll be bringing to you next month. And then I think we really only scratched the surface of a lot of the how do we design better projects and what do we expect of projects. And it was really good to hear a lot of people throwing out a lot of good ideas, because I think that's what we need to actually make this success. So, and I think we'll really pick up on those at the September meeting, because I think we got what we needed in terms of how do we need to test our model to ensure that it's the most robust tool to move forward with that effort. So I just wanted to thank you all again. I really appreciate your time and look forward to convening again next month. Thank you again.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good afternoon.
Bye now.